build personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance, Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. In tornado-shattered Greensburg, Kansas, some folks walked through the tatters of their lives today in tears, feeling hopeless. Some fought the tears and stiffened their backs.
Don't know where they'll be when we're all done with all this. A lot of people are leaving, and I hate that. I won't leave. I'll be here.
There is hope, and there's a lot of help. David Paulison brought FEMA.
The part that FEMA is going to play is we are here to assist the state, assist the local community, to get this community back on its feet.
The Red Cross is there. Peter Tian.
We've been able to get them financial assistance to buy clothes, to buy toiletries, to make sure they had a place to stay.
President Bush visits on Wednesday. The proposal to allow more prescription drugs to be imported because they cost less has come to a vote in the Senate. CBS News correspondent Dan Raviv joins us live now from Washington. Dan?
Harley, for those who want to legalize prescription imports from Canada and other countries where medicine's a lot cheaper, there was victory. A quick voice vote saying yes, but the legal imports won't happen because of a more formal vote, 49-40, on Republican Thad Cochran's amendment requiring all drugs coming in be certified as safe.
Counterfeit drugs contaminated with an industrial solvent have poisoned hundreds, if not thousands, of people.
Federal health officials say they don't have the budget to certify foreign medications. It won't happen. Live in Washington, Dan Raviv, CBS News.
Actor Michael J. Fox appealed to scientists today to take stem cell research beyond the academic stage to the practical. Creative treatments are needed now, he said, not just for Parkinson's, but Alzheimer's and so many other diseases the research holds such promise to cure. Outside that biotechnology conference in Boston, demonstrators raised angry voices over the construction of a new biotech lab in their Boston University backyard. Others don't like genetic development of foods or testing on animals. Most folks who use and abuse drugs don't get help, no matter how easy it may be to find. In a word, they kind of like doing drugs.
A survey in the Archives of General Psychiatry shows only 8% of adult drug abusers ever receive treatment or intervention. Just 40% of people with a lesser drug dependence get help. This survey finds high abuse rates among 30 to 44-year-olds, signaling a need for expanded treatment services for middle-aged and older Americans.
CBS's Barry Bagnato in Washington. When John Bandrick was told he had pancreatic cancer and just 2 years to live, he quit his job, sold his stuff, ditched the mortgage, just stopped paying, and spent the whole next year eating, drinking, vacationing, spending like there was no tomorrow. Well, now he's learned it wasn't cancer. He is not dying. He is broke, still in debt, credit in tatters, and he's blaming his hospital for the second diagnosis that should have filled him with joy. He says he wants money, or he'll sue. On Wall Street, the Dow gained 48 points, another record high to close at about 13,313. NASDAQ lost a point. Oil, $61.47 a barrel, down 46 cents. This is CBS News.
If you can't take your business on the road, customers might take their business elsewhere. Office Depot has all the latest technology you need when you're on the go, like a huge selection of notebook computers, wireless printers, networking solutions, and mobile accessories. Don't tie your business down. Let Office Depot lend you a hand.
Whoa, Office Depot!
Never miss your favorite shows with a free DVR upgrade from Dish Network. Introducing Dish DVR Advantage. The two-room DVR comes standard. Plus, get over 200 channels, free standard professional installation, and 3 free months of HBO, Cinemax, Showtime, or Starz Movie Pack. All for just $39.99 a month for 10 months. Call 1-888-499-DISH today. Offer ends 5/31/07. Subject to change without notice. Requires $49.99 activation fee, 18-month commitment, and credit card auto pay with online billing. 10-month discount requires mail-in redemption. Restrictions apply, including early cancellation fee.
Her Majesty the Queen of England has been giving the royal wave to the people of Washington.
Cheers and applause from onlookers as the President and the Queen walked onto Pennsylvania Avenue in front of the White House after their lunch. Buckingham Palace calls it a walkabout, which gives the British monarch a chance to meet local well-wishers. But this was no haphazard outing. It was carefully choreographed with students from the British School of Washington. They waved Union Jacks and offered Her Majesty bouquets of flowers. President Bush seemed more at ease working the crowd, telling the kids, "Glad to give you an excuse to skip school." Mark Knoller, CBS News, the White House.
The highest-paid player in baseball is now Yankees pitcher Roger Clemens, $28 million. Probably won't play in more than about 20 games through the rest of the season. Number two, Alex Rodriguez, A-Rod, more than $25 million. He'll try to play in all 162. Manny Rodriguez of the Red Sox, $20 million. Doing okay. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
When your car or truck is ready for a set of new tires, sometimes your wallet's not. So what to do? Hurry to your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership. Right now, when you use our genuine service credit card, you'll get no payments or interest until 2008 when you spend $150 or more. And we'll even beat your best price on tires, guaranteed. Bring in any competitor's current price ad on the name brand tires we sell within 30 days of purchase, and we'll beat that price. New tires, installed by Ford trained experts, with no payments or interest until 2008. See your participating Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealer today. Hurry, offer ends June 30th. No payments and no interest if paid by January 2008. If not paid, interest accrues from purchase date. Variable APR is 23.99% as of 3107. Fixed APR, 28.99% on all accounts in default. Minimum finance charge, $1.50. Existing cardholders, see current agreement for standard terms. Subject to credit approval by GE Money Bank. See participating dealer for details.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Are you ready, huh? Are you ready? Welcome to today's edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. I want to thank the California Highway Patrol for not stopping me. I hit the road about 6 this morning in Palm Springs, California, and despite some traffic jams, made it into Los Angeles just in time to miss my flight. So then I switched airports, airlines, and hit the ground in Oakland about 90 minutes ago. So I'm prepared as I'm going to be for today's show, and I hope you'll join me for the entire 3 hours if you possibly can. We've got a lot to talk about. In our first hour, we're going to take a look at the media in this country, the commercial media, and public television. Paul Waldman will join us in a moment from Media Matters for America. In about a half an hour, producer and director Anissa Mehdi will join us. She has produced for Frontline and other PBS programs. And also, you've heard her on NPR. We'll talk about a show that was pulled from public television last week. Also on today's program, we meet face-to-face for the first time. Jeffrey Feldman is going to make the trek to my secret studio. He, of course, is the proprietor of a great website, frameshopisopen.com. He's an expert on framing and language, or lingo. And he's got a new book out called Framing the Debate. We'll spend an hour with Jeffrey Feldman a little bit later on. And also on today's program, Mike Ergo served our nation in Iraq and has returned and no longer supports the war. We'll find out why in the free speech zone. And before the program ends today, we're going to dial up to India and speak to the chair of the IPCC, that is the International Commission on Climate Change. And he is Dr. R.K. Pachauri, who is getting up at the crack of dawn in India, so he can speak with us, and I appreciate that. And there is some good news. It is not too late, in his opinion, to deal with the global warming issues. And so we'll get his summation of the new report that was published Friday by the UN's International I don't remember what the P stands for, but I'll get to it. Climate change is what the C and the C stand for. That's all ahead, and your calls and comments are welcome at any moment. My email box is overflowing, so I wouldn't suggest you go there right now. But you can always call into this program toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I want to dedicate today's program to my new friend, Granville. I'm going to tell you about him right now. I met him at a very interesting tennis tournament that my friend Joe Kells competed in over the weekend in La Quinta, which is a resort community just past Palm Springs in the desert. And it was fascinating to meet some of the folks there. And when Granville and his wife Virginia found out that I do a radio show, they were very interested. And then they found out I'm a liberal. And, oh, that was a little shocking to them. So we had a fascinating conversation, friendly, but we clearly disagree on many issues. And then we found some common areas of agreement. For example, I allowed us how I wasn't a big fan of Gray Davis and that recalling him did not ruin my day. We talked about a few other issues as well. And what was interesting was I brought up Bill O'Reilly because both Virginia and Granville apparently watched The Factor every night. And I said, doesn't he do a lot of name-calling? And Granville looked at me and shot me this you know, very focused look from his eyes. And he said, well, you know, Soros paid for that study. So it pointed out to me that one of the great dangers confronting America in this day and age and moving forward is that we have parallel universes. And Granville and Virginia, I want to make it very clear, are smart people. They love our country. And yet Fox News Channel, I think, has steered them into some very troubled waters. Joining us is Paul Waldman, a senior fellow at Media Matters for America. Their website is mediamatters.org. And can we get one thing out of the way first, Paul?
Yes.
Has George Soros ever contributed a dime to Media Matters?
He hasn't, neither directly nor indirectly. And regular watchers of the O'Reilly Factor might remember that about a couple of weeks ago, O'Reilly put up this chart where he had Soros at the top and all these other liberal organizations with arrows going to them, and all the arrows came down to Media Matters. Now, I should note that we'd be quite happy to accept a donation from George Soros if he wanted to give us one. There's nothing wrong with his money, but he just hasn't happened to have seen fit to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think we're at a moment where conservatives are getting increasingly conspiratorial, and nobody more so than Bill O'Reilly. And George Soros is kind of the puppet master behind all the conspiracies that he sees out there. It's getting more and more fevered and more ridiculous. Now, the study that that Granville was referring to, I don't know if you've talked about it before on the show.
We haven't, no.
Ah, well, it came out of Indiana University. It was published in a peer-reviewed journal where some people did an analysis of Bill O'Reilly's rhetoric. Based on some old techniques that are used to analyze propaganda. What they found, among other things, is that he uses some kind of name-calling about once every 6.8 seconds.
Wow. That's a record to really hold dear. I don't think I could ever come close to that, even if I tried.
Yeah, well, it depends how you define name calling, but there's really no question about it. But one of the interesting things is, of course, that he claims that he doesn't call people names.
He told our friend Mike Farrell. He told my friend Mike Farrell that point blank.
Yeah, and we put up a video on our website at MediaMatters.org of him telling that to Mike Farrell, and then a whole string of videos of him calling people names.
Mm-hmm.
He immediately started to attack the messenger, of course. And what happened was he found out that George Soros had made a contribution to Indiana University.
Ah.
And he said, aha, and this is probably what your friend Granville is referring to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it turns out that the contribution that George Soros' foundation made to Indiana University was for setting up some educational programs in Kyrgyzstan. What that has to do with the study that a couple of people in the journalism department did, only Bill O'Reilly could figure out.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't seem to have anything to do with Kyrgyzstan, but in any case, that seemed to be the smoking gun,
mm-hmm.
as far as he was concerned. But I think that, it's this sort of shoot the messenger strategy that says that if the facts are not as you would like them to be, then they can't be wrong. They can't be right. There has to be something wrong there, that the facts must have a bias. And so if you can figure out some kind of distant connection to George Soros, this guy that that Bill O'Reilly doesn't like, mm-hmm. then that negates everything. It means you don't have to listen to what that particular study says or anybody says. If you don't like what they're saying, you can just find a way to attack the messenger. Now, as you say, you know, this is something that's really problematic for our discourse. I mean, we're always going to have disagreements, and that's frankly what's good about politics. If we all agreed all the time, then it would be pretty boring. But in order to have a reasonable debate, there have to be some facts on which we can base our discussion. We have to be able to accept that certain things are true and certain things are not true. But one of the things that's happened in recent years, I think, is conservatives have moved to this sort of postmodern position where there are no real facts. Everything is a matter of opinion. And if you don't like the facts, then the facts must have a liberal bias. And that, I think, is in a sense really kind of poisonous, because it means that you can never move forward. You can never convince anyone that they might be wrong and you might be right if they're not even going to accept that there are any facts on which you can both agree.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go into a political debate without even accepting the idea that you might possibly be wrong and that the other side might have a good point, then you're never going to get anywhere.
Yeah. No, I consider this a serious problem, and I want to underscore that I find Granville to be a wonderful person and a smart man. He worked for a major newspaper in the Los Angeles area for many years, selling advertising, and he is presumably well-read and well-informed. But it seems that his BS detector is disarmed when he's watching Bill O'Reilly. That's a person he trusts. And he doesn't seem to hear the name-calling that goes on that is quite obvious to me. I don't know that I've ever counted 6.8 per minute, but I have noticed that that's something that Bill O'Reilly leans heavily on.
Yeah, absolutely. And in his world, you know, there are only two sides to every question. And if you're not with him, then you're against him, and you're an enemy. And you must be out to destroy America. And if you're not supporting the president, then you must be supporting the terrorists. And if you don't agree with him that there's a war on Christmas, then you must be trying to, you know, banish God from the United States of America. Whatever the issue of the moment is, there's only his side and the wrong side, and all manner of terrible, sinister intentions are imputed to the people who happen to disagree with him.
And, Paul, before we go to a break in a minute, how do we fix this?
People should read MediaMatters.org every single day to learn the facts. That would be a good starting place.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I think that we all have an obligation to go into debates being willing at least to consider the possibility that the people we don't agree with might be right.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean we have to throw away all our own arguments, but you have to be willing to listen to what they have to say with that kind of an ear. And if your assumption going in is that they're just evil and they can't possibly be right about anything, then that's different from listening to what they have to say and concluding that they're wrong. You can do that and be a reasonable participant in a debate among citizens.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going in assuming that everything that they say is wrong without being willing to even listen to what they say, then you're not really having a debate. You're just screaming at each other.
And Granville, if you care to call the program, I'd love to hear from you. 888-5 Peter B is our toll-free number. You dial 888-573-8372. And if you'd like to talk with us, I'd love to hear from you. Anybody else can call, too, and talk about Bill O'Reilly and his penchant for name-calling. As we continue, we'll get Paul Waldman's take on last week's GOP debate and how it was different from the joint appearance of the Democratic candidates on the same channel on MSNBC. More coming up in a moment right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
May 14th, 9 a.m. to noon. Thanks for joining us. The Ed Schultz Show, where America comes to talk.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
It's Behind the Wheel, the Consumer New Car Review. I'm Peter B. Collins. This week, I've been behind the wheel of the 2007 Ford Expedition, the second largest in the Ford SUV lineup. My demo is a 7-passenger Eddie Bauer edition, comfy and roomy, just like your family room on wheels. Powered by a 5.4-liter V8 engine with a 6-speed automatic, this big bus accelerates quickly, has great traction with 4x4, and is remarkably nimble for its size. With 4 captain chairs and a 3rd-row bench, it's got all the gadgets and power toys you'd expect, including DVD player, satellite radio, nav system, and power liftgate and 3rd seat. While it has backup sensors, I'd prefer a rear bumper camera on this big bus. By the numbers, the 2007 Ford Expedition gets about 13 miles in the city, 17 on the highway, and stickers in California for about $49,000. Behind the wheel, I'm Peter B. Collins.
Okay, you want a website? What next? A lot of people can do the job, but you want innovation at a reasonable price. You want Dale Edward. Dale builds amazing websites with streaming video. Being a pro photographer ensures high-quality content. Websites, wedding, and special events photography, all at a reasonable price. Go to DaleEdward.com or call 277-9847. That's 277-9847.
And based on our comments in the first segment about the Bill O'Reilly name-calling thing, Billy is on the line from Capitola. Hey, Billy.
Peter, you bald-headed, pinko, sissy windbag. What's wrong with name-calling?
Yesterday, my new friend Granville was upset because I was wearing a pink hat.
See?
So the pinko is just perfect, Billy.
I'm being appropriate. Yeah, I sort of like a more spirited, look, we have the Tom Hartmans and the Peter B's, guys who are gentlemen, give out information. And then you need some a-holes on the radio, don't you think?
Well, I honestly try to limit my own name calling, but it is something that is instinctive at times.
Right. I try not to, for example. I do more heat than light, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We do live in a culture that does a lot of name calling, much of it in jest and good natured humor.
Exactly.
But I do try to be careful about it, and I know I'm not perfect, but to me, adding more fuel to that fire is like putting out a fire with gasoline. Paul?
Well, I think that there's,
you know, you can look at this in a couple of different ways. I'd be the last person to say that politics should just be about position papers and kind of eating your peas. You know, politics should be fun and interesting. I mean, I know, and you probably feel the same way, Peter, that it's the most interesting thing in the world to me. And it should be lively, and we should be passionate about it. But I think we also have to be careful about not assuming that people who disagree with us have bad motives. And that if they, you know, if they disagree with us about a matter of foreign policy, it means they don't love their country. It's when we get into that kind of area that things really become poisonous. And so I think we anyone who participates in public debate, and that, you know, it goes all the way from the president down to, you know, ordinary people who just write letters to the editor or call into radio shows like this one, that we all have an obligation to kind of be responsible and make sure that we're not treading over that line to the point where we're turning opponents into enemies.
Mm-hmm. I think it depends on the subject. For example, on something like the war, say, if the other side is just sort of being, you know, cavalier about people's lives because they're just not willing to admit they're wrong and let their president have to do what he's supposed to do and act like a president while he's president, I don't feel good. No, I can't actually feel okay about a person like that. It really does matter on certain issues.
Absolutely, you're absolutely
okay,
right. It does matter, and you shouldn't feel constrained about being passionate and getting angry sometimes. You know, sometimes being angry is the appropriate response.
Exactly.
You know, I wrote a column for Tom Paine a few weeks ago that listed off dozens of reasons why liberals are angry, and I thought that all those were appropriate reasons to be angry. But I think that we have to not get to the point where, you know, frankly, I think conservatives go a lot of the time where if you disagree with me about this, it must mean you hate America and that you're trying to you know, let the terrorists win. You know, people can be profoundly wrong. They can have forgotten where morality lies. We can make all those kinds of arguments without making an argument that they should never ever be listened to, that nothing that they say can possibly be right, no matter what they'll say from this point forward.
Mm-hmm. Billy, thanks for making a good point, and I'll try to think of some real groovy names to call you next time.
Thank you,
buddy. Okay? Thanks for checking in. Now, Paul, Media Matters published a study this week, and oh, by the way, at MSNBC, they've decided that Michael Smirkanish will be the permanent replacement for Don Imus, which is a big disappointment to a lot of Stephanie Miller fans who listen to this program. Nonetheless, you published a report at Media Matters about the racial and gender balance, or lack thereof, on major networks.
We did. You know, when we were watching the coverage of the Imus affair, over here at Media Matters, we always have our TVs tuned to MSNBC and CNN and Fox News. We noticed something kind of unusual. All of a sudden, there seemed to be a greater diversity in the guests who were brought on those cable news shows to talk about this issue. You all of a sudden saw some black faces there where you don't ordinarily. And we thought, well, why don't we see to what extent this really is true? So what we did is we looked at all the cable coverage during prime time the week before the Imus controversy, and then the week of the Imus controversy, and then a week after the Imus controversy, just to see what it really looked like. And then we did some other stuff, too. We looked at all the hosts on all of the cable channels, including CNBC and Headline News, between 4 p.m. and midnight. And what we found is, like, there wasn't a lot of diversity before Imus, there wasn't a lot of diversity after Imus, and there's not a lot of diversity among who gets to host these shows. For instance, when it comes to the cable news hosts during those times, that's kind of the time when they have the personality-based shows,
right.
You know, the people whose names are in the title of the show.
Mm-hmm.
There are 35 hosts and co-hosts during those time periods on all those five channels, and all 35 of them are white. 29 out of the 35 are men. And if you look at who the guests are, what we found is that the week before the Imus controversy broke, you'd have anywhere between 70 and almost 95% of the guests on each of those channels were white. Then it actually, you know, as you might imagine, it went up pretty dramatically when they were talking about Imus. You had a fair number of African American guests that came on, and then it pretty much returned back after the Imus controversy was over. And we found some other interesting things, too. For instance, Latinos comprise about 14 to 15% of the United States population, yet they are less than 5% of the guests who show up on cable news.
Mm-hmm.
They're almost completely absent. So they're really, hopefully this controversy will lead the cable networks to give some thought to whether or not their Rolodexes should be bigger and whether we're having a diversity of views on their channels.
Very well. Thank you for the study, and thanks for joining us today. Paul Waldman from Media Matters for America. Visit their website, mediamatters.org. I'm Peter B.
I'm Todd, the taxi driver, and nothing hacks me off more.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
I'm Todd, the taxi driver, and nothing hacks me off more than the lack of courtesy, the lack of ethics, and just the way that people treat each other on a daily basis. I've been attending the city council meetings in Marina lately, and I just find it outrageous the way that our elected officials talk to members of the public. These individuals are elected to represent us. What does represent us mean? It means that when we come before them and we share a concern about something that's going on in our community, it means they listen. Now, I know every problem can't be fixed, but the first thing to do is create a dialogue between each other. But along with that dialogue, there comes responsibility. The responsibility for us, the citizen, to politely address our elected officials and for our elected officials to listen to us. This is Todd, the taxi driver, and I'll be talking more about this in the future.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
The Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
You will not
not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised.
And that's not all.
The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox and Four Parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading the charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised.
That takes us back to the Nixon years. Gil Scott-Heron, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. Last week, Public Broadcasting System decided to pull one of the documentaries called Islam versus Islamists, Voices from the Muslim Center, from its series America at a Crossroads. And we get commentary on this decision from Anissa Mehdi. She has a fascinating and interesting biography. She got a degree in journalism at Columbia. She worked on NPR's All Things Considered. You've probably heard her commentaries there. She also was a contributing correspondent to the PBS series Religion and Ethics News Weekly for a number of seasons. She was executive producer with Alvin Perlmutter of the two-hour PBS Frontline special Muslims back in 2002. She also worked at ABC News on the Nightline Up Close Jack Shaheen, and that program examines stereotypes of Arabs and Muslims in America's entertainment media. And she's the producer-director of Inside Mecca, the National Geographic special that premiered back in October of 2003. There's much more to her bio, but I think those are some of the key points. Anissa Mehdi, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Thank you, Peter, for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. Nice to talk with you. So tell me about this program that was pulled. I have not been watching the series America at a Crossroads because, that special hour hosted by Richard Pearl, just the description of it was enough to repel me.
Well, you know, sometimes I think, Peter, whether or not the descriptions of programs are appealing, it's a good idea for us to be keeping an eye on them,
mm-hmm.
just to know what's out there. I have to confess, having said that I did not watch the entire series. I have, as I'm sure do you and many of your listeners, a fairly active life, and I play in an orchestra. We rehearse on Tuesday nights, and I have a number of other commitments. That said, I was generally discouraged by what I saw. Because I didn't see anything brand new. I didn't see anything that we didn't really know well already if we'd been paying attention to the media. And I was already disappointed that, and I don't want to be sour grapes, but I had submitted some proposals to the series that
mm-hmm.
had been turned down.
Oh.
I don't know enough about the program that was withdrawn, that was, Islam versus Islamists, to be able to comment in great depth. But the thrust of the first series of programs that came out in America, The Crossroads, really, overall, it wasn't a well-rounded series.
Mm-hmm.
It was more of the same. I'm not telling you anything you don't know.
Yeah.
That these are dangerous people, and that even their own criticized them. There was a program in which Irshad Manji, who's a known critic of Islam, who's a Muslim, was able to give her point of view. I'm not saying that those points of view shouldn't be heard, but I am certainly eager to hear a bunch of different views, like the ones we hear on your program, the antidote to right-wing talk radio.
Well, we do what we can, but, Anissa, we're outnumbered just in the commercial radio talk business alone. The advantage held by conservatives is over 14-1. And the imbalance in the media is something that is a real critical problem. Just before you came on, we were talking with Paul Waldman from Media Matters for America. And I told him about a man I met over the weekend who is a Fox News viewer. And he has a view of the world that is sharply different from mine, and he has his own set of facts which depart from things that I believe are neutral, that are not opinion matters, but simply matters of fact. And I think that public television is the last place where we go looking for coverage that is not tainted by either the tabloid instincts and expressions that we see on so much of the commercial media, or the conservative viewpoints. And let me just pull one. Friday night we spent a little time watching ABC 2020. It's the first time I've watched it in probably 5 years, because we were promised that the Washington Madam was going to name some new names. Well, that wasn't the story that I want to comment on. It was followed by a John Stossel piece, which was not labeled opinion. And it appeared to be lifted from a book that he's published called Myth, Lies, and Something Else. And in it, he went into what was clearly an editorial view that essentially we should ignore the voices who respond to the Virginia Tech calamity by saying we need fewer guns in our society. And he made the argument, which I've heard many times from those who embrace the Second Amendment and unlimited gun possession practices, that they believe that we would be actually safer if somebody at Virginia Tech had had a Glock in their briefcase and pulled it out when the shooting started and finished off the aggressor there. Now, again, this is a matter of opinion. It's worthy of discussion. ABC 2020 gave John Stossel 6 minutes to present that as fact.
Yeah, that's a real problem we have. And what I notice is that increasingly people who are counted on to be journalists or reporters or as best as can be the objective voice and the person who has the opportunity to inquire into subject matter on behalf of our viewers and listeners are more and more becoming the opinion rather than the transmitter. And there is no distinction made by the presenting organization. It's a big concern. All of us need to know when we're hearing opinion and when we're hearing commentary and when we're getting what is at least an effort at some kind of objective reporting. And I would argue that very rarely is there entire objectivity. You know, each of us is a representation of what we've learned as kids growing up and who our parents were, who our friends were, our grandparents, our culture. And those kinds of even unconscious elements are reflected in how we report on things. Mm-hmm. When we are a reporter in a war zone, we're reporting for our people. We're feeling for our people. We're defending our people, our government, our men and women on the ground. And that's not objective reporting. But when the other guy does it, when Al Jazeera reports similarly, defending their people, we call them biased without acknowledging that that's what we're up to as well.
Well, that's a very
interesting... It's not wrong, but we need to acknowledge it, right?
Well, Anissa Mehdi, that's a great example that you raise, because from my perspective, the coverage of the Gulf War in 91 and 92 was not a cheerleader exercise. I felt that the electronic media in this country, more or less, covered it in a relatively neutral way. But what we saw with the embeds in the invasion of Baghdad in the spring of 2003 was a go America go. This is the report about our team and our troops taking on this brutal, dastardly dictator to bring him down. And one of the pieces of evidence I would offer is that CNN International was featuring a completely separate feed during that time period, while Aaron Brown was wearing his American flag lapel pin to try to keep up with the anchors on Fox News to prove that they were sufficiently nationalistic. And I think that we crossed a line there that we probably will not go back over.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, but I also think that during 91 that the level of objectivity was absent. A lot of the companies that were over there are subsidiaries to some of the companies that were building the weaponry,
mm-hmm.
the Westinghouses and the
General Electric. They bring good
General
things.
General Electric. There we go.
We bring things.
You need to get out there and say, my paycheck comes from General Electric. Those bombs are seen going off in the background. They're being made by the company that pays me. Now I'm going to give you my report. And we're not going to get that, but if we're going to be conscious and thinking and critical listeners, we need to know these things. Because then we can weigh, maybe that's why I'm only hearing this part of it. And it got worse with the embeds. But you can't blame reporters on that, Peter, because they're with these people. You develop a relationship. You develop naturally affections with the people that you're spending time with, and you're bound to feel with them.
Well, I have an understanding of that, Anissa, but I also think that true professionals can rise above that and report critically, even on people that they're in a foxhole with.
We don't have true professionals, or they shouldn't have agreed to do it.
Well, I think the embed is part of the problem, but I also think that it's wrapped up in how much reporters get paid, and that they have become part of the upper class, and they tend to identify with the corporate interests who pay them in six figures much more than, I'm reaching for an Edwin Newman or, you know, an Eric Severide from the historical past of broadcasting, people who made a decent living but didn't really cross that line and become part of the limousine crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that.
So I want to return to PBS. We're talking with Anissa Mehdi here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And what is your sense as someone who has produced for them, and you acknowledge that you had some proposals in for America at a Crossroads, has the tone shifted, and has the effort by Kenneth Tomlinson, who was the head of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and who had a clear political agenda? He squeezed Bill Moyers out temporarily and brought in some conservative voices on public television. Is that trickling down to every level of their, particularly their documentary and news coverage?
I don't think the jury has rendered its decision on that right now, but it looks like the evidence that keeps being presented would say that it is trickling. My concerns are because of the, you know, who's at the tops of these organizations now have been beholden to administrate our administration and are going to be leaning in directions that I don't particularly care for. But because we're in a democracy, Peter, these folks are going to get voted out and different people are going to be put in place. And different kinds of programming initiatives will come along. We just have to be patient. We don't want to be patient, perhaps, but I'm not going to give up on PBS because of a particular current that's there now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and nor am I suggesting that. I think it's very important for people of every stripe to continue to press so that, you know, a whole range of voices is heard. My sense, you know, as an antidote, an attempted antidote, is never to silence any voice with which I disagree, but simply that we need full-throated people of every perspective. And I did get my friend Granville, who I was referring to earlier before you joined us, to acknowledge that Alan Colmes is hardly a balance to Sean Hannity. So we need more and not censorship or control, but I am very concerned about what remains of the independence of our public television system.
Absolutely. And let's also understand that the America at a Crossroads series, it has not finished, you know, with its materials yet. There are more documentaries coming out. That was the initial volley. And we'll see what other kinds of programming comes out. Who knows, Islam versus Islamists may be included in the next series.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there were technical problems with it. You know, maybe there really were legitimate reasons to hold it back.
Mm-hmm.
If we look further into the story.
All right. We're going to take a break and continue. We'll go to the phones in the next segment. If you've seen the PBS series that we're referring to, America at a Crossroads, and you want to offer a comment, you're welcome to call in right now. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. That's our toll free number here at the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540. Visit our website at KRXA540.com.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Hi, Ed Schultz here. Starting May 14th, the Ed Schultz Show moves to 9 a.m. to noon right here on KRXA 540. So join us for the best in talk radio, news, commentary, and your calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be on the Ed Schultz Show, 9 a.m. to noon, starting May 14th, right here on AM 540 KRXA.
Seize the day and save money. That's the slogan of Stardate Solar, a company providing you with the highest quality solar power for your Monterey Bay Area home or business at the guaranteed lowest price. And that's the idea behind the Stardate Solar Power Hour. I'm your host, Dale Julin. Every Saturday at high noon, our nationally known cast of energy experts will tell you the latest news about the coming solar economy. And you'll also hear about the politics of solar power as well. The Stardate Solar Power Hour, Saturdays at noon and at StardateSolar.com.
In these United States, you have many rights. You have the right to assemble. You have the right to free speech in a free speech zone. You have the right to an attorney. You have the right to a speedy trial. Well, not if you're in Guantanamo. You have the right to privacy. No, wait. No, the FBI can read your mail and listen to your phone calls. America, where are your rights? Join Billy Sunshine, then we'll find them for you.
The Billy Sunshine Show, right here on KRXA 540 AM, Sundays 3 to 5.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. Jeffrey Feldman returns to our program. He's live at our secret studio. He'll be with us after the top of the hour. In the meantime, you can drop into his website, frameshopisopen.com. We'll be talking language and framing next hour here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We continue with producer, director, and I guess she has talent, too. Anissa Mehdi is our guest here on the Peter B. Collins Show. That term talent can be abused, you know.
Yes, it can.
But you're a multi-talented person. I mean, besides journalism and producing and directing, you're also a musician.
I'm a musician. I couldn't live without music sometimes, I think, although I have for long periods at a time. I'm a flutist and a piccolo player. Sometimes I wonder what playing the piccolo really says about my character. You know, you have to be a certain kind of person to scream out at the top of a 100-person orchestra, right?
Yeah.
Do you play an instrument, too?
I don't. I admire those who do.
Ah.
And I try to support them in every way I can, but that was not a talent that... I tried the recorder in third grade and did not make the cut.
Well, there's playing the radio, right?
And yeah.
My dad used to say he played the record player.
Now, Anissa, I want to return to our discussion here at PBS and also the broader issue of Muslims in American media. We've hit a kind of low point with this fellow Glenn Beck, who is a radio talk show host of a conservative stripe and was hired this year by Headline News to do a primetime half-hour show. And he's the one who brought Keith Ellison, the first Muslim American member of Congress, on the air and questioned his patriotism in a way that offended me and certainly had to offend Muslims even more. Are we ever going to get past the caricature stage, in your view?
Well, the short answer to that question is yes, but let me also say with regard to Keith Ellison, it probably offended his constituents even more than it may have offended Muslim Americans in general,
mm-hmm.
because they are voting for him to represent them. They're not voting for him because he's a black American or because he's a Muslim American. They're voting for him because he's the best human being to be their man, their person, in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a lot of permission in our society over the last, certainly since September 11th, 2001, but even prior to that, to digs at Muslims, to be rude about Muslims and about Arabs, specifically as a as an ethnic group, but also Muslims who are not Arab. Just as in the past, there was permission in our society to be rude about black people and be rude about Jews, be rude about Irish, you know. In those days, perhaps there was less access to hearing and seeing and experiencing that rudeness. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have so much live radio and so on and so forth. But those days are gone. You saw what happened to poor Don Imus going too far.
Mm-hmm.
And those days are going to go with regard to the abuse that Muslims are taking in this country, too.
But,
we're in the middle of it now.
If you'll forgive me here, because I'm going to engage in political incorrectness, but if his phrase had referred to the Rutgers basketball team as ragheads, or, you know, with some other epithet that is often pointed towards people of the Middle East in an indiscriminate way,
mm-hmm.
Would he have been fired?
No.
I don't think
Do you think he would have been fired?
No.
I don't think so at all.
No,
I think there would have been a ruckus raised by some of the Muslim civil rights organizations that are existing now and learning how to be effective. But by no means do they have the kind of power and sway and weight that the other civil rights organizations do.
Mm-hmm.
They did, however, I was glad to see weigh in on the Ina situation and saying this is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were part of that wave of protest.
Right.
But no, if he had said ragheads or banned N-word or any of those other kinds of things, I don't think Imus would have come under that kind of scrutiny and would have lost his job.
Yeah, let's take a caller. Dave's on the line from Eureka. Dave, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with Anissa Mehdi.
Well, thank you, Peter. Anissa, very early in your appearance, I may have misunderstood it, but I think you had indicated you'd learned very little new from the program. You were reminded that there are some dangerous terrorist types that are existing out there in the Middle East. And my own recollection, I spent a few years in Africa many years ago, and most of the Muslims that I came to know were pretty mellow, decent people. I don't think in the history of Iraq any one of them had ever strapped a bomb on themselves and walked into a crowd. They're reacting to their country being invaded and people being killed unfairly. That's my guess.
Well, what's your comment, Anissa?
It's my guess, too. We hadn't seen any of that before. And this whole notion of you know, strapping a bomb onto the self. I mean, you've got to be absolutely desperate to take an action like that. I would argue that's why we see, you know, Palestinians doing that as well. They weren't doing that when they were pre-British Mandate Palestine, even in the Ottoman Empire. There were protests and there was rebellion, but people weren't doing this suicide thing, and certainly not in Iraq until, the last several years.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say this, too. It is actually not permissible within the concept, the whole construct of Islam, to kill yourself. That's not a choice you get to make
mm-hmm.
as a human. That's God's decision to make.
Yeah.
You know, so they're committing an illegal act. They're that desperate. They're committing an act that is forbidden by their own faith.
Anissa, just about a minute remaining. What are your thoughts about what non-Muslims can do in this country to try to expand understanding and help, lead to depictions that are honest and accurate and not simply attacks in a stereotypical manner?
I'm going to answer your question, Peter, with a plug for a program that I'm actually doing down Highway 1 from you guys at the Esalen Institute. To be transparent, I am an Esalen trustee.
Oh, I love Esalen.
I love Esalen. It's a great place, and Esalen is very involved right now in looking at interreligious communication, in interreligious project building, peace building, not just on the interpersonal level, which is a program that I'll be leading there July 20th, 21st, and 22nd, with a fellow Jew and a fellow Christian, three of us together. And also, Eslin's involved in, again, in some of the international citizen diplomacy work that was so famous for in the 1980s, you know, helping to melt the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
So check out the Eslin.org website and see what we've got worked in there. Because it is through understanding and knowing one another that we'll begin to find that the stereotypes are unacceptable.
Anissa Mehdi, welcome and thanks for joining us today.
Every night, Jack Thomas camps out on a cold, lonely street corner. Tonight, some people almost brought him something to eat. Someone almost drove him to a shelter. Another almost brought him a warm blanket. And Jack Thomas, well, he almost made it through the night. Sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. But that's the same as not giving at all. Don't almost give. Give. Visit don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 a.m. from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The killer tornado buffets the Kansas National Guard.
We don't have the equipment we once had, and so one storm we can handle, but very much more, and we'd have to ask for help from someone else.
Medicine from Canada will remain illegal. I'm Dan Raviv in Washington.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. A lot of the National Guard isn't in Kansas anymore. It's in Iraq or Afghanistan. So when disaster struck at home, it's pushed the remaining troops and equipment to the limit. This is Major General Todd Bunting.
We have enough assets right now in the Kansas National Guard to respond to a storm of this magnitude, but we have other storms going on in the state. And so what we're stating is we have enough for this storm and maybe one other small storm, but we would be stretched if we had something else happen in the state at this point in time.
They're dealing with flooding caused by the same system that spawned Friday night's monster tornado. Today, the death toll rose to 10.
We have recently now confirmed two fatalities. One was located at our lake, which is north of town, and another was found in the middle of town.
Greensburg City Administrator Steve Hewitt, there's very little of the town left. Only about half a dozen homes remain standing. CBS News correspondent Hari Srinivasan met some very lucky survivors.
A mother and her daughter showed up exactly where they hid, and it's remarkable. The rest of the house is almost gone, but that particular closet and that room stayed intact, and they were able to survive because of that.
The twister produced wind in excess of 200 miles per hour. 84-year-old Eva Marie Butterfield lost everything.
I went and to get dressed to go somewhere. And I told my daughter-in-law, I said, I don't even own a comb. How am I going to comb my hair? Those kind of things is what really gets you.
Now this.
He was a first lieutenant with the 15th Field Artillery Regiment in World War I. He was an iron worker who helped build the Chrysler Building in New York City. He was a father to three daughters and two sons. He is waiting to be found.
Meet your ancestors. Learn their stories. Search millions of records and family trees at Ancestry.com and start your journey of discovery today.
If your car or truck is ready for new tires before your wallet is, hurry to your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership. Buy tires now and pay later with our genuine service credit card. Plus, bring in any competitor's current price ad on the name brand tires we sell within 30 days of purchase, and we'll beat that price, guaranteed. New tires, installed by four trained experts. Buy now and pay later. See your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership for details today. Offer ends June 30th.
It was a confusing process in the Senate, but the bottom line is that Americans will not legally be able to buy prescription drugs abroad. CBS News correspondent Dan Raviv explains.
There was a meaningless victory on a voice vote for senators such as Byron Dorgan, Democrat of North Dakota, who've long wanted to legalize importing medicines from Canada.
Should the American people be paying the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs? And the answer is no. It's not fair.
The victory meaningless because the Senate also voted for what Republican Thad Cochran of Mississippi proposed, that all imported medicine be
safe and effective drugs, which are approved by the Food and Drug Administration.
Federal health officials say they can't certify foreign medicines. It won't happen. Dan Revive, CBS News, Washington.
It doesn't look good for World Bank President Paul Wolfowitz. Reportedly, a special panel has concluded that Donald Rumsfeld's former deputy at the Pentagon broke World Bank rules when he arranged a promotion and a pay hike for his girlfriend. In Los Angeles, the police commander in charge of MacArthur Park during last week's immigration rally has been reassigned. There's an ongoing investigation of the use of force in dispersing the crowd. Police used rubber bullets and truncheons. Under brilliant sun on the White House lawn, 7,000 people turned out to welcome Britain's Queen Elizabeth. This evening, a more intimate group will gather for a very fancy dinner. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller has the story.
It's the fifth state dinner of the Bush presidency, but only the first one requiring white tie and tails, the highest rung on the protocol ladder. First Lady Laura Bush admits the president had to be persuaded.
Dr. Rice and I took it upon ourselves to talk him into it because we thought if we were ever going to have a white tie event, this would be the one.
Everything about the dinner is meant to be fit for a queen, including the menu, which includes spring pea soup, Dover sole almondine, and saddle of spring lamb. The after-dinner entertainment for the 134 guests is virtuoso violinist Itzhak Perlman. Mark Noller, CBS News, The White House.
And what are you having for dinner tonight? You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
If you can't take your business on the road, customers might take their business elsewhere. Office Depot has all the latest technology you need when you're on the go, like a huge selection of notebook computers, wireless printers, networking solutions, and mobile accessories. Don't tie your business down. Let Office Depot lend you a hand.
Whoa, Office Depot!
Never miss your favorite shows with a free DVR upgrade from Dish Network. Introducing Dish DVR Advantage. The two-room DVR comes standard. Plus, get over 200 channels, free standard professional installation, and 3 free months of HBO, Cinemax, Showtime, or Starz Movie Pack. All for just $39.99 a month for 10 months. Call 1-888-499-DISH today. Offer ends 5/31/07. Subject to change without notice. Requires $49.99 activation fee. 18-month commitment and credit card auto pay with online billing. 10-month discount requires mail-in redemption. Restrictions apply, including early cancellation fee.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Heat wave in Northern California. Holy. Coming up next hour, we're going to meet a 23-year-old veteran of the Iraq War, Mike Ergo. He went to Iraq gung-ho. In March of this year, he joined protesters on the streets of San Francisco. We'll talk about his transition. And also, we're going to get a report from the chair of the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. That's the UN-organized group. And we're going to dial up India, where it's going to be the crack of dawn for Dr. R.K. Pachauri. And he'll be joining us in the free speech zone next hour, too, to tell us that it may not be too late to tackle the problems related to our contributions to global warming. That's all ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show. As usual, your calls and comments are welcome. Lines are open if you'd like to talk with us this hour as Jeffrey Feldman joins us live in the secret studio. And the toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. Jeffrey, of course, has been on our program many times. I first discovered him listening to the Tom Hartman program, and he's based in New York City, studies language and framing, rhetoric, and he's published a new book called Framing the Debate, Famous Presidential Speeches and How Progressives Can Use Them to Change the Conversation. and win elections. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hi, Peter.
How you doing today?
I'm great.
Nice to meet you in the flesh.
Hey, it's great to be here.
And you thought I had a full head of hair and all that, right? And I was about, you know, real skinny.
I had in my mind a long flowing hair. But I'm not disillusioned.
Well, it was there about 25 years ago. And then it started to fall out. Well, Jeffrey, it's a real pleasure to meet you. And I just want to thank you in person for the work that you do and the intelligent analysis that you bring us to some of what passes for political rhetoric in the modern age. You're on a book tour, and why don't you tick off a couple of places you're going to be over the next few days. And then I want to talk about a specific issue that I'm struggling with. Then I want to talk about some of the recent candidate appearances on television. We'll mix it up a little bit, and we'll take some phone calls, too, if people want to join in the conversation. What are some of your stops on the West Coast leg of your book tour?
Well, tonight we'll be at Drinking Liberally in San Francisco, which is at a bar called Zeitgeist at 199 Valencia, and everybody should stop by there. That starts at 6 o'clock, and there should probably be a big turnout. And then the day after tomorrow, on Wednesday, I'll be at Cody's, a bookstore in Berkeley, appearing with George Lakoff. And if you show up, Book TV will be there from C-SPAN as well. So if you ask a question, you'll be on TV.
Nice, nice. And you did have an appearance scheduled in Pacific Grove, and for our Central Coast listeners, that had to be rescheduled because of a fire?
Apparently there was some type of incident in the building at the Stoetz. The Friends of the Stoetz Museum were hosting me, and I'm still waiting to find out about that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you did have a reservation there, you should probably check with the organizer and find out what's going to happen.
Great. I told this a little bit last hour as I started the program. Over the weekend, I was in Palm Springs. It was a neat little tennis tournament for people who play on grass courts with wooden rackets, and it's called the Woody. And one of the champions in the finals yesterday is named Granville, and his father, Granville, who I think is Granville the Third, was in the audience. And Granville and his wife, Virginia, found out that I do radio talk shows, and they seemed excited. And then they found out that I'm a liberal, and that gave them great consternation. And we got into a very interesting conversation, and, you know, we weren't trying to solve the problems of the world, and neither one of us was trying to win a debate. But what became very clear is that we are in parallel universes. They are heavy users of Fox News Channel. One of the things we discussed is how much name-calling Bill O'Reilly does. That is the subject of a report that came out of Indiana University, and Bill O'Reilly attacked that report on his show and claimed that it had been funded by George Soros. That's not true. But my new friend Granville was very convinced of that because he heard it from a source that he considers highly credible. And he dismissed the general allegation there that's based on this study, which is that Bill O'Reilly does name-calling at the rate of 6.8 times per minute, which is breathtaking. It really is. I mean, even if I did OxyContin, I don't know if I could achieve that. And so I bring this up because I'm really interested, Jeffrey, in reaching out beyond the choir of listeners who I love and who listen to this program and seem to have some regard for me and the viewpoints that we bring. But I'm more interested in persuading people like Granville, in trying to open their minds and get them to see that, in particular, Fox News is a dangerous source to rely on. So I want your advice here. Let me get on the couch and tell me how I should approach people like this who have such different sets of information.
Yeah, it's a really tricky question because, you know, one of the core concepts when we're talking about framing the debate is this notion of repetition. That really the strongest scientific theory behind the idea of framing is the notion that if words or concepts are repeated often enough, that actually changes the brain physically, such that people's conceptions about what politics is about, the right or wrong side of an issue, becomes literally physically ingrained in their brain. And so when you are talking about someone who listens to Fox News every day, who's conditioned by people like O'Reilly or like Limbaugh, we're not just talking about someone who is listening to a particular political issue, but someone who's actually been conditioned in order to understand things in a certain way. If we apply that to a concept like the word liberal, for example, you know, for the past 15 years, we've had ingrained in the minds of people who listen to conservative media outlets, the idea that liberals are dangerous, that they want to undermine America, that they're really seeking to do the types of things that we associate with people who commit treason. So the first step, really, in engaging people who are on the opposite side, who are really at the receiving end of that conservative noise machine, is somehow getting them to step away from Fox News, getting them to step away from people like O'Reilly, people like Limbaugh. So it's a very, very difficult bill to fill. But in terms of getting people to really pay attention, you know, the key, I think, is to steering them into areas that are not quite as hotly contested. For example, if we're talking about the Iraq War, which I think is, you know, the big issue that's on everyone's mind, you know, a lot of times people want to talk about immediately cut to the idea of troop withdrawal or cut to the idea of Bush being a failure or Cheney being dangerous. And I confess, I write about these things myself. But if you want to get people to listen who may not necessarily agree with our perspective, I often go back to a speech by Dwight Eisenhower, who was a Republican. Go back to his final speech, in which he talked about the great danger in American foreign policy, not being failed military occupations, but being this concept of imbalance, which is really a concept that I find Republicans and liberals listen to alike. The notion being that we, in order to make progress, in order to make peace, we need to have a balanced foreign policy. Now, what Eisenhower meant by this balanced foreign policy was that we could not have a policy driven entirely by one faction in our society. What he was warning against was a foreign policy driven by the military-industrial complex, this idea that foreign interventions that were driven by the profit motive, which would put certain people in government who would answer only to the voice of corporations. So in talking with conservatives in my own world, in my family, we all have them, the conservative uncle, the conservative grandfather, or, you know, the young lawyer who's a conservative in the family, I often steer the conversation to this notion of balance and then take it from there.
Gosh, I've got one of each. You mentioned the nephew. My nephew David in San Diego has taken a hard right turn. 14 years ago, he worked as a producer for me on my liberal radio show, and I know I made him squirm a little bit, but he's now one of them, and we do have some interesting conversations over the holiday tables. We're talking with Jeffrey Feldman here on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I want to open up the phone lines for you and ask about your issues similar to mine. How do you deal with smart people, people who are quite likable and who you don't think are nuts or you know, deranged or anything like that, but they are captive to these sources of information that push them into a very right, hard right point of view? And I'm very interested in your ideas. If you have an uncle or a grandpa or somebody like that who you've been able to persuade with a little humor, or maybe you sit them down and watch Jon Stewart together on The Daily Show at Comedy Central, if you have any techniques for reaching out, opening minds, and persuading people on the other side of this great divide, I invite you to call and talk with me and Jeffrey Feldman this hour. Lines are open for you, toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. It's 888-573-8372. And you can try the email, peter@peterbcollins.com. There's a big backlog there, but I will catch up with it sooner or later. And, Jeffrey, just about a minute before our break coming up here, have you had any breakthroughs of your own with those relatives who are much more conservative than you?
Well, I have. In terms of with the conservative members of my family, I find that moving things to what I call a management frame has been relatively successful in the past few years. When I'm talking about a management frame, it's a way of framing the Republican administration in terms of their competence and their incompetence. So talking about the inability of the Bush administration to manage a budget, their inability to plan more than a few feet out in front of their own nose, I find that this has been very successful, particularly with Republicans whose identity has been forged out of their success in business. They see their politics as a product of their organization and success. So pointing out how inconsistent that is with the Bush administration has been, in my experience, quite successful.
Like Katrina. We'll take a break and return with Jeffrey Feldman. Lines open for you. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. You're in tune with the Peter B. Collins Show.
If If you like people who talk funny, listen to 70 Minute in the Morning on AM 540 KRXA. Ha!
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in Soquel Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive and Porter Street in Soquel.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Karma Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid-Karma Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Karma Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid-Karma Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Karma Shell at Rio Road and Mid-Karma Valley Valero. Putting the service back in service stations.
Hi, it's Sheila Gale reminding you to listen to my show, 12-Step Talk Uncensored, all about addictions, every Saturday, 4 to 5 in the afternoon, 12-Step Talk Uncensored, where we deal with addictions, taking the shame and the blame out of this horrible disease. 12-Step Talk Uncensored, it's about time. Sponsored by Sun Street Centers, Building Healthy Communities, a drug and alcohol treatment center in Monterey County. For more information, call 753-5135, Sun Street Centers.
Check 1, 2. And hear it fine on this head. Allen Show. Now watch my deaf fingertips here as we avoid a $350,000 fine from the Federal Communications Commission. This is Mick Jagger and the Stones. With that, we got to wait a couple of seconds here, and I will rejoin the tune. how come you're so wrong, my sweet neocon? I guess that's not going to work with Granville, you think, Jeffrey Feldman?
I don't think that's going to work. Not even close.
Well, listen, Thursday night they had the joint appearance, the Love Fest, and I refuse to call these things a debate unless there actually is interaction and people are allowed to argue the issues. It was a joint appearance, a sequential question and answer period for the 11 current contenders for the Republican presidential nomination next year. So give me a couple of quick thoughts on the overview, and then maybe you can pick two or three of the pretender contenders who you think have some traction.
Yeah, what I call the GOP puppet show held at the Reagan Library. And, you know, in terms of the overall framing, I still think that, you know, anybody who watched this event and thinks that it's going to be a cakewalk for the Democrats in the presidential election is sorely mistaken. This was a meticulously framed event right from the start. The whole concept was the legacy of Ronald Reagan. They even had film footage of all the candidates walking through the presidential library. There were literally dozens and dozens of references to Ronald Reagan, and the very first questions was a toss of the hat to Ronald Reagan. So you had all these candidates who come from very different perspectives, from people who are kind of rabidly anti-immigration to those kind of murky positioned, you know, centrist Republicans, were all asked to position themselves relative to Ronald Reagan. And of course, you know, the great big elephant in the room, or the elephant who wasn't in the room, was the current president, who had, you know, done his best to put the Republican Party at the bottom of the ocean to crash and burn. So the idea of giving the current set of candidates a set of roots and what they kept on calling the legacy of Ronald Reagan was everywhere. And I thought it was very, very successful. The event really had a sense of emotion, a sense of common spirit, and any division that there was between the candidates was lessened as a result of it. It was a great event to watch.
And, of course, the Republican base buys the Reagan mythology lock, stock, and barrel, and MSNBC did nothing to puncture that.
No, I mean, in fact, one would think that Chris Matthews was getting some type of a royalty for every time he mentioned the name Ronald Reagan. They were literally gushing over this legacy of Reagan.
Did he mention that his boss, Tip O'Neill, used to talk about how they could get together and have a drink in the evening after fighting over politics all day? I've heard that story almost as many times as his declarations of love for Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it really is incredible. But, you know, you put that on top of what is really, you know, this is not something that comes out of the blue for the Republican Party. For a long time, they have been building this big frame for what politics is all about in this country. And they've been doing it through the name and the image of Ronald Reagan, not just changing about, you know, as many airports and town squares to be called Ronald Reagan as possible, but by constructing this story of a man who, for many of us, you know, just never existed, this kind of Papa Bear American president, friendly to everyone and good for the entire nation, as opposed to a man who really drove the debt up, who was cruel and heartless in many ways to the poor, racist, homophobic, and you know, really had an incredibly dangerous foreign policy. So,
well, and I think you summed that up very well. We should hear about that occasionally in the corporate media, but it's all been lost. We just hear the hagiography repeated endlessly. So who surfaced for you in this joint appearance as somebody who's got some traction?
Well, I think there were two, really. The first was Giuliani. I mean, Giuliani had a rehearsed first answer to how he would embody the Reagan style of leadership, and he used this word optimism. He repeated that about a half a dozen times in his answer, and he said that really to be a Reagan Republican meant to solve problems with optimism, and that was a segue for Giuliani into talking about how he, in his own active imagination, single-handedly brought back New York City after the attacks of September 11th, which, of course, was not true. I mean, really, Rudy Giuliani caused an incredible number of problems, not to mention insisting that businesses be reestablished around Ground Zero in an environment that was toxic for people to breathe. But his answer was very fluid, and it was very persuasive. So the first one is, you know, Giuliani tying himself to Reagan and the notion of optimism. The other, I think, was Mitt Romney. You know, Mitt Romney, I think, as a piece of Republican eye candy, there's been a lot of talk about how much money he's raised. But Romney really was able to break out of the pack and how much he could think on his feet. In particular, there was a question about stem cell research in which Romney talked both about the importance of finding cures because he has a sick wife, which was in response to a question from Nancy Reagan, who is in favor of stem cell research, but at the same time pushing non-embryo stem cell research. So Romney really did a great job at finessing complicated issues. So
he split the baby.
He split the baby.
Or the embryo.
Exactly.
All right, we got to run to a break here. We'll continue after the break with Jeffrey Feldman. His new book is out, Framing the Debate, Famous Presidential Speeches and How Progressives Can Use Them to Change the Conversation and Win Elections. And we'll take your phone calls in the next segment, but you got to get on the line first. Call us toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372 puts you through to the Peter B. Collins Show. Produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. Visit our website, peterbcollins.com, where you can catch the live stream and our archive programs, too.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
I'll tell you what I got cooking. Dinner's ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinner's ready?
That's right. Dinner's ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready!
A man and a woman. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. The winner of the French presidential election is conservative Nicolas Sarkozy. He easily beat Ségolène Royal, the socialist who was trying to become France's first female president. Now, where else might we see such a contest one day? I don't know, but I'll tell you, there was an interesting sexual dynamic in their final debate when Madame Royal got into a passionate argument with Monsieur Sarkozy about education.
No, I will not calm down.
Don't point your finger at me. You don't have to do that.
No, I will not calm down. I will not calm down.
If you want to be president, you have to be calm.
No, not when there's injustices.
Madame said she was only expressing what she called healthy anger, but Monsieur Sarkozy found it very unpresidential.
I don't know why Madame Royal, who usually is so calm, has lost her nerve.
No, I have not lost my nerve.
Can I answer?
No.
You'd think he'd done something really terrible, like forgotten her birthday.
I'm not annoyed. I have not gotten upset. No, I am very calm.
Well, you just lost your cool there.
No, I am angry. I'm angry when I'm facing injustices.
He even provided some friendly counseling.
I've noticed that you get upset very easily. You get angry very easily.
And she eventually seemed to figure out what was going on.
Don't be condescending.
I'm not.
No, of course not. Condescension was the farthest thing from his mind.
And you are using words that hurt. I'll tell you something, I don't hate you, because anybody can lose their cool.
Yeah. And shortly thereafter, she also lost the election. Now this.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, and pop-up ads invade your business every day through email, web browsing, and instant messaging. And the fastest way to stop them is with Barracuda Network's spam, firewalls, and web filters. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM now and ask for your free trial. Barracuda Network's firewalls are affordable and easy to use. That's why over 35,000 leading companies are using the award-winning firewall. Try a Barracuda firewall for free. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go online to Barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Tune in to Todd the Taxi Driver, Monday through Friday, 3:30 p.m. I'm Todd Hurlbert, host of The Week in Politics. Each Monday night at 10 p.m., we get together and talk about the political issues that are important to all of us. We'll cover the local issues. We'll talk about the Washington, D.C. issues. I'll share my opinion. Then you call me and tell me yours. That's Monday night, 10 p.m., The Week in Politics.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show on a sweltering Monday on the left coast. It's 33 minutes after the hour. Jeffrey Feldman found his way to our secret studio. He's live with me today. And we're taking your phone calls, only there's nobody on the line. 888-5-PETER-B, toll free, 888-573-8372. Now, I am proposing that this is the theme song for Clinton 08. They really wore out that Fleetwood Mac song about Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow. But isn't Hillary's whole plan just to squat out there in the middle of the road and force the other Democratic candidates to take positions either to her left or right? But she's kind of a road hog.
Yeah, it does seem that Hillary Clinton's strategy is to, you know, do what she would say in her own mind, I think, is triangulate with positions that are on the right, which would put her in this kind of this notion of neither being too liberal or too conservative, but being right there in the middle of the road. And from time to time, I think, whenever there is a position on the left of her that seems exciting to people, just appropriating it and claiming it as her own. I think that will be her strategy for quite some time. You know, we saw that this week during the past few appearances of all the candidates together, you had Bill Richardson propose something which was actually quite a creative and interesting idea, which was to put a bill through the Congress which would deauthorize the war, effectively setting in motion a constitutional question that would then have to be resolved by the Supreme Court. And in the past couple of days, Hillary Clinton put this forward as her own proposal. And I think what you see there is not Hillary Clinton being momentarily extremely liberal, but just making sure that there are no positions that are more exciting than what she's offering on either side.
Just a quick note on the paternity of that idea. Back in January, we had a conversation with Congressman Sam Farr, the Democrat who represents Monterey and Santa Cruz. And we had that day spoken to an attorney or a law professor at Ohio State University about war powers and about the authorization to use military force. And Congressman Farr came on after that, and I raised the question. I said, what about war powers? And, you know, is there some way we can rein in the president? And the next day, he introduced a bill, a very simple two-clause bill, one that would declare the authorization to use military force repealed, and the other to instruct the president to bring the troops home as expeditiously as possible. And I think it's a very interesting idea, and I just want to give Sam Farr and little old me a little credit, because I think that it is a way to put the president on the defensive without appearing to fail to support the troops.
Yeah, I think it's a great strategy, and you know, another way to think about it is it's a second line of pressure against the president. You know, for a long time now, the main frame that the Democrats have been pushing has been one of funding, the idea of putting forward a supplemental bill that would limit the engagement in Iraq, put timelines on, and force a change in direction. But this second line of pressure, which deauthorizes and really talks about the legality of the entire war, I think it, you know, as many lines as we can open up is critical. So, you know, kudos
but
all around.
I would offer this, and it's something that we should hear Hillary, Bill Richardson, and Sam Farr all saying, that it was John Warner, the senator from Virginia, the former chair of Armed Services in the Senate, who first raised the issue about whether the original authorization had any relation to the occupation. and the Civil War that we are supervising at this time. And that's the person who should be cited when they want to talk about the legality of the occupation and whether this supplemental, in essence, extends the legality of the original authorization.
Yeah, I mean, I think that reclaiming as many as of those voices as we can is crucial, particularly such noteworthy Republicans who have been outspoken, if not supporters, then at least defenders of the president's policy, and tying it back to them. And their questions about their legality are crucial. And let's not forget it. These aren't abstract questions of legality. They go back to the original wording of the bill, which cited the presence of weapons of mass destruction and an imminent threat from Saddam Hussein as the reason for declaring war. And so the proposals that have come onto the floor of Congress are about those original bills and bringing them back into the public discussion, and literally saying, look, you know, we found that these conditions were not there. Therefore, this original authorization has no legal basis.
Mm-hmm. Jeffrey Feldman is with us. He's got a new book out called Framing the Debate. And Jeffrey, take a moment here to tell us some of the speeches that you cite in the book, famous presidential speeches over really some generations, and which you think Democratic candidates could effectively cite or model on for the debate and rhetoric required for the 2008 cycle.
Well, the book has 15 speeches that run, you know, all the way from George Washington's inaugural speech clear up to a State of the Union by George W. Bush. And the idea really in bringing them together is not just to cite great speeches by Democratic presidents, but to go back in and find progressive ideas in the full run of American history with the broader strategy of giving progressive communications roots in the tradition of American speaking. Now, in terms of the speeches that I love and that I think are really germane to the present moment, I would cite really two. The first would be FDR's inaugural speech from 1933, in which he, you know, famously used the phrase, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself." But I think that the real power in that speech is not what most people believe it to be. A lot of people think that when he's talking about fear, he's talking about a fear of the Nazis and what was happening in World War II. In fact, that fear he's referencing is a fear in the investment bankers that held the economy in a death grip for many, many years. And it was through this idea of moving past our fear to a new conception of the economy that FDR was trying to reinvent the very notion of what American culture or society was about, this notion of a society based on achievement and looking forward. And I think, you know, the notion of a New Deal, for example, a New Deal for health care, these are ideas that can be lifted out of FDR and applied to contemporary problems, I think is a great speech, particularly for presidential candidates to use. The other one is...
Let me just jump in. I agree with you, and I think that the fear issue should be raised because it is one of the most potent weapons that the Republicans have, and Giuliani is trying to pick up that cudgel from Bush and fear us up. Fear up is an actual military term for trying to scare the heck out of people.
On many different levels, fear of terrorism, fear of going bankrupt, fear of not having health insurance, fear of your neighbors. I mean, there's all kinds of fear the Republicans are trying to wield. And, you know, if you listen to some of the candidates out there, someone like Barack Obama, for example, who has tried for a long time to put out this idea of hope, I think that there is an awareness that a strong Democratic presidential campaign will frame all issues in terms of a broad positive concept. But I don't think that there's been a real effort yet to give it roots in something akin to FDR.
Mm-hmm. And you had another point about the second speech.
Well, I love Lyndon Johnson's speech that he gave at the University of Michigan, the Great Society speech, in which, you know, he talked about what effectively were dozens and dozens of very technical bills that he was going to put through the Congress, but he framed them in terms of this incredibly powerful idea. You know, he talked about building a great society, this approach to talking about progressive and liberal ideas, which doesn't dwell too much on the details of the blueprints, but actually gives us an impression of what the entire end product would look like when it was constructed. And for LBJ, that was a society that cared for its cities, that cared for its environment, and cared for educating its children. And it really was a real powerful model for how you could talk about real programmatic change in progressive terms without getting bogged down in the details. And I think that all the candidates out there right now could really benefit from that message. Talk about the building that you're putting out there. Don't get bogged down in the blueprints, and you'll bring people along. And then when it gets down to brass tacks, we can sit down around a table and work on the details together.
I'm interested in the dynamic, and these are somewhat polar opposites. The Democrats use hope. The Republicans use optimism. And I have to think that Frank Luntz did some focus groups where optimism just trumped everything, because Bush is quite incredible in the true meaning of that word. He is not credible, because he will operate as if he's in deep denial about the obvious problems that he is responsible for, he and his cronies, but primarily him, and then offer up this sunny optimism, I guess, gleaned from the Reagan era, that, hey, don't worry, be happy. I've screwed everything up, but you don't need to worry, because I'm optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of the Republican notions of optimism have to do with the belief that no matter what happens in the federal government, we can all, as individuals, succeed in what they want our larger goal to be, which is, you know, accumulating individual wealth. I think that there's a long-term goal in the Republican Party to paint government in this kind of a single notion, a vague notion, that government is the great demon, the great danger to our selfish desires to grow wealthy and even more and more independent. So when they talk about optimism, it's a buzzword for that. On the other hand, when we talk about hope on the left, I think that what people are trying to invoke the notion that we're all going to be okay because we're all standing together, that we're working together. Hope is a term that invokes notions of community, invokes ideas of confronting and solving problems in standing around a table or together in a room. It's not a selfish idea, but it's more of a collective idea. And there will be a struggle in the presidential election to define that. And I think that the candidate who wins, either on the left or on the right, will be the candidate that's able to ground that in the longest stretch of what it means to be American. You know, if a Democrat reaches back to notions that go beyond the current fights between the Republicans in the White House and the Republicans in Congress, and I think they'll be successful. And I think that that's a lesson that the Republicans have already taught themselves. That's why they're reaching to Reagan instead of just floating that idea of opportunity and optimism out there. They're trying to ground it in some type of historical footing. So if I had some advice to the Democrats right now, it would be to find that footing, either in some of the speeches that I put out there or in another place, in order to get people thinking in broader terms.
The book we're talking about is called Framing the Debate, and its author Jeffrey Feldman is our guest. It's out right now from IG Publishing, and Jeffrey's making some appearances. We'll recap them for you before the end of the hour. Chris is on the line from Salinas. Thanks for your call, Chris. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show with Jeffrey Feldman.
Yes, how are you doing?
Good.
I had a question. Why is it that, or why do you think that the Democratic leadership will not listen to the linguists out there, and they keep following the Republican frame? I mean, when they talk about not funding the troops, that's a Republican frame. When we all know, I mean, at least I would assume the Democrats know that this is an occupation in Iraq. It's not a war. And if we're not going to fund the occupation, it has nothing to do with not funding the troops. There's money in the pipeline. We can bring the troops home. They never want to follow on that frame.
Well, Chris, thanks for raising this. And let me just amplify a little bit, Jeffrey. You and I have touched on this in many different conversations that we've had. But I still see Senator Jack Reed of Rhode Island, who is often put out on the media as the point person on the war for the Democrats. He uses phrases like precipitous withdrawal. He talks about the war in Republican terms. He, along with Carl Levin and others, have surprised me by repeatedly saying, we will never cut off money for the troops, which is just such a serious mistake. And, Chris, thank you for raising that. Jeffrey?
Yeah, I mean, thanks for the questions, Chris. There's two of them there. And the first, you know, why don't they listen to the linguists that are out there? I would say linguists and anthropologists, being an anthropologist myself. I think that initially when Lakoff's book, Moral Politics, was published a few years back, in 2003, and then the shorter version, Don't Think of an Elephant, there was a lot of excitement for the big narrative. You know, what you saw in that book was an explanation for how it is that conservatives and liberals or progressives think differently. And there was a lot of excitement for that big story. But when it came down to actually doing the work of crafting messages, of thinking of ways to be more persuasive and more precise in our ideas, there was a lot of hedging because there's quite a number of consultants that are in place who saw framing as a threat to what they were doing, when in fact it's not a threat. It's just an addition, a way of making things more effective. So there's some institutional blockages that are there which will go away in time if we keep pushing and we keep investing in that direction. As for, you know, why do they keep following the language that's out there? Well, you know, I think that the bigger issue, even beyond talking about the war in terms of funding, I think that Bush keeps on defining the time frame for the war. Bush keeps on telling us that the war has a certain period of duration out there, and that, I think, opens him up to saying, and therefore, we need to have the funds in place in order to carry the plan out.
We're going to take a break and return with Jeffrey Feldman. There's room for more phone calls. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Also, visit Jeffrey's website, frameshopisopen.com. More in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Tomorrow Matters, hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, will be moving from Sundays to a daily spot Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll still be bringing in the guests, and you'll still be calling in with your questions and ideas, and we'll still be working collectively to set the standards for a more sustainable future. But we'll be doing it five times a week. Starting May 14th, join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters, weekdays from 2 to 3 p.m., because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
Well, thanks very much. We're going to take a look at the very latest and let you know we do have a problem working in Greenfield. This would be southbound 101 just before Espinoza. This is an injury crash. Paramedics, fire department all on scene. It's all because of an overturned car that slammed into the center divide. And like I just alluded to, there are emergency crews on scene. In Pocinas, we have Highway 25 at 146, solo vehicle. Apparently, this car overturned and went off the roadway. Minor injuries reported there as well. Tow truck is on scene. Paramedics and fire department also present as well. Let's take a look at Pajaro Porter Drive at San Juan Road. We have the traffic lights not working there, so you need to treat this intersection as a four-way stop. Traffic starting to build up in the area, so just remember to, again, treat it as a four-way stop. The support brought to you by Goodwrench. Nobody understands your GM vehicle better than Goodwrench. Whether it's a Chevrolet, Buick, Pontiac, GMC, Hummer, or Cadillac, to see how you can serve your GM vehicle.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Jeffrey Feldman is with us in the secret studio. His new book is called Framing the Debate, Famous Presidential Speeches and How Progressives Can Use Them to Change the Conversation and Win Elections. It's out right now, and you can pick it up at your favorite independent bookstore or online. You were just up in Portland at Powell's, and they have a great website at powells.com. And why don't you recap again? You're going to be going into San Francisco this evening for Drinking Liberally.
That's right. I'll be at Zeitgeist, which is at 199 Valencia, for their local chapter of Drinking Liberally. And then On Wednesday, I will be at Cody's in Berkeley appearing with George Lakoff. I'll be doing conversation, some questions and answers, and we'll have C-SPAN Book TV there in the room. So it should be an exciting event there.
Great. I want to pick up on something that you posted at frameshopisopen.com following the Democratic group question and answer period. And that is that John Edwards was one of the few people who wanted to, somewhat in concert with what Chris was talking about, use his own language and also reject the language of the Bush administration. And so he explicitly described the so-called global war on terror as an erroneous label. Now, is this courageous and brilliant, or is this as deadly as Walter Mondale promising to raise taxes in 1984?
I think that I will say it's a little bit of both in terms of the Edwards moment, because what happens was it was a surprise question to the candidates where they were asked to raise their hands, I believe, if they believe or they still support the idea that there's a global war on terror. And, you know, it predictably you had Dennis Kucinich who didn't raise his hand, and Mike Gravel who didn't raise his hand. And then the one other candidate, the top-tier candidate who didn't, was Edwards. But I'm not so sure that it was a premeditated decision on Edwards' part. And so the next couple days he gave a speech in Portland, in which he used very explicitly the phrase a political frame. He said that the global war on terror was a political frame that was strategically deployed to make us afraid to be critical of the Bush policy in Iraq and just about everything else. And, you know, one of the problems with simply pointing out that you have a frame that's in operation is that people are instantly going to ask you what the alternative is. Well, what is the alternative if the global war on terror is just an illusion, if it's just political a political tool that's out there? How should we be understanding international security? How should we be operating with our military? Who are our enemies, and so forth? And I think that where Edwards stopped short was providing a strong alternative. Instead of putting out a big idea, Edwards used, I think, smaller concepts. He talked about the need to act quickly, which was his predominant frame leading up to that point. And he talked about the need for our security to be smart and for it to be intelligent, but he didn't really define how he viewed the threat to America as different from the way the Bush administration did. So calling out a frame, important, but there needs to be an alternative there.
Now, I'm not a candidate, and neither am I advising any of the candidates, but let me try something out here and get your reaction. If a Democratic candidate were to say, somewhat along the lines of what Kerry attempted in 2004, first of all, that we have seen that military action on a massive scale did not make us safer. It didn't help us capture Osama bin Laden or dismantle al-Qaeda. And therefore, we need to rethink this. And this is really much more of a long-term law enforcement problem than it is something for our military to work on. And we have plenty of evidence, you know, the failure of the war in Iraq, the fact that there was never any connection with 9/11, even though it was conflated in the minds of many Fox News viewers, and remains that way. Can a Democrat win by trying to tell the truth and educate the American people that GWAT, as even Donald Rumsfeld has acknowledged, is not only inaccurate and inartful, it's not helpful?
I think that, of course, they can win by telling the truth, and they should, by all means. And, you know, talking about an effective frame is not by any means a way of avoiding what that truth is out there. I think that the one problem with the notion of talking about a police approach to fighting terrorism is that it seems to be trumped by the much more emotional threats or warnings about nuclear bombs and terrorist attacks in cities. And so trying to leap back to a less emotional concept, it can be a little bit difficult, I think. You know, one of the things that Democrats...
Excuse me, but what about an alternative approach, like instead of tasking the military, I'm going to create the al-Qaeda Cruncher Task Force, you know, and we're going to be smart about this, and we're going to send commandos, and we're going to drop them into Pakistan, and we don't care what the Pakistanis say, and we're going to get that guy.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that we need to talk about being smart and fast, and we need to come up with a policy and proposals that really electrify the American imagination. I think that, you know, we are a country that likes to believe that we can solve just about every problem by bringing together manpower, determination, and technology. And I think that those ideas are ideas that can be brought into combination to the benefit of Democrats. But I also think that Democrats need to claim in very passionate terms the responsibility for the military itself, talking about how the policies have not just failed to stop terrorism, but they have broken our military, broken the backs in terms of, in economic terms, but also in terms of the idealism of those who would enlist in the Army. So, you know, smart, fast, but also, you know, we're going to take responsibility for restoring the greatness of the military.
Well, Jeffrey Feldman, it's a real pleasure to meet you in person. Thanks for making the trip here. I hope you're very successful on your West Coast book tour, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks so much, Peter.
Visit the website, frameshopisopen.com, and Jeffrey Feldman's new book, once again, is called Framing the Debate. Coming up next, we head into the free speech zone. We're going to kick it off with Mike Ergo. He served in Iraq and formerly supported the president's war. We'll talk about what changed his mind and why he is now marching in peace protests. Also next hour, Dr. R.K. Pachauri joins us from India. He is chair of the IPCC, and we'll talk about the third report on global warming that was issued last week. That's all ahead right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. 10 people are dead, some 1,500 displaced by the tornado that demolished Greensburg, Kansas. Kathy is one resident who's hoping they can rebuild and people come back.
Don't know where they'll be when we're all done with all this. A lot of people are leaving, and I hate that. I won't leave. I'll be here.
Once again today, CBS News correspondent Hari Srinivasan says people picked through the remains of their shattered homes.
There are those mementos. There are those little things, the medals that your daughter won at a track meet or family pictures that just can't be replaced, and that's what people are going in to try and salvage today. They can always buy more clothes, they can fix a car, their house might be insured, but memories are priceless.
The National Guard is there to help, but with many troops and a lot of equipment in Iraq and Afghanistan, Major General Todd Budding says they're stretched to the limit.
We do have a lot of our resources deployed or that haven't returned, and so it's a tough time, but we have enough for this one, and we got here, I believe, in a timely manner, and we'll stay here through the duration.
If there's another emergency, officials say they'd have to ask for outside help. More fallout from last week's immigration rally in Los Angeles, where police swung batons and fired rubber bullets to disperse a crowd that included children and the elderly. CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman has the latest.
The top-ranking officer at the scene of last week's May Day melee at MacArthur Park, Deputy Chief Lee Carter, has been reassigned. Los Angeles Police Chief William Bratton announced the move.
Chief Carter was a two-star deputy chief. Personnel action that I took today reverts him back to the rank of commander.
Bratton said that Carter will be reassigned to home duty, which means he will work out of his house. A second high-ranking officer at MacArthur Park was also reassigned. Steve Futterman, CBS News. At City Hall in Los Angeles.
In the Senate today,
the question is this: should the American people be paying the highest prices in the world
for prescription drugs? And the answer is no, it's not fair.
North Dakota Democrat Byron Dorgan made the argument for allowing Americans to buy medicine overseas. But what carried the day was the argument made by Mississippi Republican Thad Cochran.
Americans deserve continued access to safe and effective drugs which are approved by the Food and Drug Administration.
The Senate voted 49-40 to require federal health officials to certify that drugs coming across the border are safe and effective, something the FDA says it cannot do. That effectively means Americans can't legally buy drugs from Canada, Europe, or other foreign sources. At the White House, right now, a stately state dinner for Britain's Queen Elizabeth. She in her tiara, President Bush in white tie and tails. There are 134 invited guests feasting on Dover sole, Almondine, and Saddle of Spring lamb, with appropriate wines, of course. The Dow up 48 points to a new record close, 13,312. This is CBS News.
Welcome to Lardo's.
Yeah, can I get an order of spare tires?
Yeah, what size? Plump, chubby, or incredibly huge?
How about incredibly huge?
You want love handles with that?
Oh, yeah. What are you really getting in your combo meal? The new Subway Fresh Fit Meals fit into the American Heart Association's approach to a healthy lifestyle. Tasty, low-fat subs, better-for-you sides, and a drink. Subway, eat fresh.
Fat content refers to regular 6-inch sub on white or wheat bread without condiments that contain fat. See store for additional nutritional information, including sodium content. Products may vary. Subway is a registered trademark of Doctors Associates, Inc.
Chances are your old computer can't run all the latest software. Get into Office Depot today for a huge assortment of the newest computers and software, plus wireless printers, flat panel monitors, memory solutions, and more. Don't risk slowing down your business. Let Office Depot lend you a hand.
Whoa, Office Depot can lend you a hand.
Ford Motor Company announced today it will close its casting plant in Cleveland and shut down its Cleveland engine plant for at least a year. Jeff Gilbert of Detroit station WWJ has details.
Ford's decision will eliminate more than 1,200 jobs permanently and send 600 workers on layoff for about a year. Ford Manufacturing Vice President Joe Hendricks says they will offer a new round of buyout deals strictly for workers in Cleveland.
We have a lot of retirement eligible people on the Cleveland site, and we are trying to encourage as many people as possible to consider the aid options that we have for people.
With this announcement, Ford has now named 10 of the 16 plants that it intends to close by 2012. Jeff Gilbert, CBS News, Detroit.
Ron Callan Jr. died without a will. He left an estate worth $2 million, but everybody's fighting over his dog, a 13-year-old golden retriever named Alex. Callan's father, his ex-wife, a former girlfriend, and his fiancée all want Alex. A judge has appointed an attorney to represent the dog. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
He was a first lieutenant with the 15th Field Artillery Regiment in World War I. He was an iron worker who helped build the Chrysler Building in New York City. He was a father to three daughters and two sons. He is waiting to be found.
Meet your ancestors. Learn their stories. Search millions of records and family trees at Ancestry.com and start your journey of discovery today.
If your car or truck is ready for new tires before your wallet is, hurry to your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership.
I can help. Take a tip for me.
Buy tires now and pay later with our genuine service credit card. Plus, bring in any competitor's current price ad on the name brand tires we sell within 30 days of purchase, and we'll beat that price, guaranteed. New tires, installed by four trained experts. Buy now and pay later. See your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership for details today. Offer ends June 30th.
Live from San Francisco, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Lively, informative, compelling, progressive talk radio. And it's interactive, too, which is a fancy way of saying he takes your phone calls. Toll free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. Fasten your seatbelt and let's take a ride in Peter B.'s America.
Those who start wars never fight them. And those who fight wars, they never like them.
We're kicking off the free speech zone today on the Peter B. Collins Show. Your calls and comments are welcome at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372.
And those of us who just fight laws, we live and die them. But I know they're never gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, no. Never ever gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, no. Never ever gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, it's time. It's time to go home. To take our boys and win. To take our girls and win.
888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And to kick us off in the free speech zone today, a man who served honorably in Iraq in the United States Marine Corps and whose life changed in Fallujah. Mike Ergo joins us on the program today. Hello, Mike. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure, and thank you for having the courage to speak out about the issues that you care so much about. I learned about you from a front-page article in the San Francisco Chronicle a few weeks back. Have you gotten more attention than you wanted?
I've had a bit of attention. I Googled my name the other day and saw some online forums discussing whether or not I was a real person or not. I guess there's some debate as to whether I ever served in the military or if I was a real person or not, but things like that. But, no, I've got to do some speaking engagements since then. Speaking at colleges, so it's been good.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Why did you join our volunteer military and sign up to serve in the Marine Corps?
Well, I grew up in Walnut Creek, which is a pretty well-to-do city in the East Bay, and I wanted to go to college, but I really didn't know what I wanted to study, and I knew myself I was pretty lazy. I knew I definitely wanted the values that the Marine Corps instilled, honor, courage, and commitment, and especially the discipline. And so I also knew that serving in the Marine Corps was something that I could accomplish. I could do by myself, though, and it wouldn't have anything to do with whether or not my parents helped me, because I couldn't. So I guess it's a way of proving myself, too.
Now, do you believe that the deployment in Iraq is consistent with what you entered the Marine Corps for?
No. Actually, the Marine Corps is designed as a fighting force to be the first waves in for any conflict, first off, and after the heavy fighting's over to, you know, pass it over to the Army. But obviously that didn't work out, so they started redeploying the Marines.
Mm-hmm. And before you left for Iraq, what was your opinion of President Bush?
Before I left for Iraq, I was a different person. I supported him. He looked like an honest guy. I mean, I really didn't look into it too much.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't very political, and I knew that, well, I assumed he was a Christian because he told everyone that, and I figured he was a trustworthy guy that had everyone's best interest at heart.
And when did your opinion start to change, Mike Ergo?
I think when I started looking into it, how he's asking the American people to make these sacrifices that he's never made himself, and with such conviction, too, and I just can't get over that he's, you know, saying we can't cut and run and various phrases like that, and I don't think he's cutting and running from anything. He has nothing to lose. He's not going to get deployed over there again. He doesn't have any time to serve, and he really has, you know, nothing at stake by saying that.
No skins in the game.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And tell me about your service, and take it up to the point where you served in Fallujah in the second assault in the fall of 2004.
Well, let's see. I joined the Marine Corps May 11th, 2001, before September 11th happened, obviously. And after that, after September 11th happened, I definitely would have joined. I knew it was a pivotal moment in history. And that whatever was going to happen, that I wanted to say that I helped serve our country and was able to help out. So I went to boot camp. I went to the School of Infantry, was stationed over in North Carolina at Camp Lejeune. It's part of the 1st Battalion, 8th Marines, an infantry unit. And my first deployment to Iraq wasn't very significant. We were one of the only battalions not to fly directly over there and be part of the invasion. We only spent a month in April of 2003,
mm-hmm.
up in Mosul, mostly guarding an airport and doing security patrols. Came back in November of 2003 after being on ship for 8 months. And our second deployment was in June of 2004. And training for that deployment, we knew that the mission had been accomplished, as per the words of the president. And we were told to expect no combat. We were told to expect to do stability operations, which meant basically going around, shaking hands with people, and asking people if they needed medical attention, mm-hmm. or however we could assist the Iraqi people. And so, as grunts, we were actually kind of disappointed because we wanted to do some of the fighting, and we couldn't believe that we'd missed out on the war. You know, little did we know that everything was pretty much getting started then. So, over there in Iraq, we flew out from North Carolina, landed, and was greeted to a nice sunny day of about 130 degrees.
Mm. Yeah.
So, but for about the first month, the war didn't really seem like anything real. It was just mostly boredom, patrolling around foreign villages, talking to people, just like they said. I think that changed for me first off when my best friend Todd Godwin, corporal, was killed by an improvised explosive device.
Mm-hmm.
And while I wasn't there to see it myself, it was a shock because I talked to him a day and a half before, right before he'd gone on his mission. He was part of the sniper platoon. And it really set in my mind just how final death is and how just abrupt it is with no last words, no dramatic music while you're holding someone in your arms and they're telling you their last request. That doesn't really happen.
Yeah.
And I noticed that even more in November of 2004 when we made the second assault on Fallujah.
Let me just ask you, first of all, did you have any resentment that, they had taken Fallujah and then let it go and you had to go in and go house to house to retake it?
You know, I didn't understand. I didn't understand that. It looked like, the military's hands were tied. And I thought it was unfortunate that they didn't let the military do that at the time because I knew that if they just made a brief attack and then withdrew, that it would only fester and have more
mm-hmm.
More and more insurgents start to gather there, which
yeah.
did happen.
Did you or anybody near you use white phosphorus in the routine called shake and bake?
We didn't. No, my unit was. Well, speaking from the people I served with, no, we
mm-hmm.
used high explosive dual-purpose grenades.
Yeah,
we used fragmentation grenades, 5.56 ammo for our M16s, and I mean basic ammo, basic weapons.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have any white phosphorus or anything like that.
Okay. So describe what you encountered when you went into Fallujah in November of 2004.
Well, kicked it off. We were sent in with amphibious tractors, which looked like somewhat like tanks that carried personnel in the back. And they dropped a ramp in the middle of the night as we were taking this compound. And I remember I was the first one out of the ramp watching rockets go overhead and bullets and tracers. And I took about a step and a half and fell on my face. And I figured I'd hit a sack of potatoes or something, something that, blocked my path. And came across later just to see a blown apart insurgent still clutching his AK with the arm he did have.
Oh, boy.
And from then on, that was pretty much the introduction to Fallujah for me. And sites like that weren't very uncommon. We went house to house from the north to the south and cleared just about every single house from north to south and then turned around and started clearing sectors. How they broke the city up into sectors, and we'd clear a sector on a given day and then clear another sector. And I ended up clearing one house about twice, and that was before my friend Brad went in and cleared it. And but that time, of course, there's no way to lock up all the houses in Fallujah and to make them officially clear and safe. They're only clear if as long as you are in the house, and as soon as you leave, the insurgents can run back in there. So
right. That
time, he ran in for the third time. My unit or my platoon had cleared that house, and he was killed. Insurgents were waiting for him, shot right through the door, and he died immediately, which is, I guess, the silver lining in the cloud. He didn't have to suffer.
Yeah.
But
Mike, hold your thought there. We got to take a break, and when we return, I want you to describe this a little more. And please do keep in mind your own health. And if it's hard for you to talk about these things, don't feel forced. But you're helping our listeners understand your first-person experiences there. And to the extent you can do that, it's extremely valuable.
That's what I'm hoping.
We'll continue in just a moment. Mike Ergo, U.S. Marine, served in Iraq. He's talking about his experiences in Fallujah. We'll continue in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at KRXA540.com.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Thanks very much. We're going to take a look at a problem. We're going to look at Greenfield right now. Looks like southbound 101 just before Espinosa. Injury accident still reported there. This is an overturned car, and it actually, the vehicle slammed in the center divide and, again, flipped over. Emergency crews of paramedics and fire department on scene there, and traffic is slow in the area. In Inner Lake and Green Valley Road at Lita Lane, we have a problem. It's on the It's actually a crash. It's on the right shoulder. Two vehicles involved in this one. And at Pacheco Pass 152, just eastbound after Dinosaur Point, with a vehicle on fire. It's a big rig. Now, it's on the right shoulder. The fire department has the right lane blocked at this point, and the traffic is backed up for at least a good, solid couple of miles. Toyota Prius with an EPA estimated 60 miles per gallon in the city. Visit your local Toyota dealer and find out why the Prius is the car people say they would buy again. Prius, yes. That's traffic on KRXA.
Still to come today, about 10 minutes away on the Peter B. Collins Show, we're going to dial up India and talk to Dr. R.K. Pachauri. He is chair of the IPCC. That's the international group taking a look at our contributions to climate change. And we're going to talk about the third important report that was published just last week. And what kind of prospects there are that humans can reduce our contributions to global warming. That's ahead here on the PBC Show. We continue now with honorably discharged U.S. Marine Mike Ergo, E-R-G-O, who's on the line with us today. And, Mike, as we took a break, you were describing the situation in Fallujah in the fall of 2004. And from the news accounts I've read, it seems that that experience really shook you up and caused you to think about things that you hadn't really processed before. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, that, like I was telling you, that whole month was just nonstop chaos for the most part. And as cliche as it sounds, once fighting gets somewhat heavy, yeah, I mean, you really don't care about any other ideal than protecting your friends and just getting out of there alive. I mean, just every single day when it came to, you know, almost stepping on a landmine, having machine gun fire rake up and down in between me and my point man as we're pinned up against the wall, to getting a brick shot out from underneath my hand while I was posting security up on a roof. I started waking up just every day with a sense of kind of dread. And eventually, I think my survival mode kicked in. And I wasn't really afraid to die. I just said, you know what, if it comes, it comes. And just kind of left it up to fate. And looking back at it now, just experiences like that, and the way, you know, I was excited to kill people, how my friends, you know, were excited when we killed people, all combatants. But just to see where my life went from playing Little League baseball, being in the high school band, and being a happy-go-lucky kind of guy to becoming that, just that change. I was looking back at myself, and it kind of looks like two different people. Mm. And I'm not ashamed of killing people. I was keeping my friends alive, keeping myself alive. But just to find out that we didn't find any weapons of mass destruction, there's no friendly ties between Saddam and Al-Qaeda,
right?
Saddam and Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
You know, all these, the big ideals or the big reasons we were told when we went to war, that my friends died for and that I fought for and I witnessed my friends dying for it, just to see that none of those turned out to be true, it was kind of disappointing.
Yeah. Well, Mike, I really hear what you're saying, and I'm one of those people who hasn't been to the war zone. I thank you for putting your life on the line for the rest of us. I deeply respect the service and your contributions. I'm sorry that the policies that you were sent to, conduct military action around were phony, based on faulty intelligence and, in my view, probably intentional lies by the Bush administration. And I'm sorry that, you were sent to do your duty in a way that was, simply so wrong and mischaracterized. I mean, they sold you and the rest of us a bill of goods, and you were the one who went and risked your life to try to defend the ideas that Bush had put forward. Let's take a call here. Laird is on the line from Eureka. Hello, Laird. Go right ahead.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Mike. There was a story here in the States about the Blackwater incident in Fallujah. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, in 2003.
I was wondering if Mike knew.
Uh-huh. Mike, you aware of that, the Blackwater troopers who were killed?
Yes, and I think that was actually in 2004 in April.
You're right. Thank you.
Were you told about this before you went back to Fallujah?
This was in the news. I was stateside at the time, and I watched the footage from the news in my barracks about this. So, and they informed us of this as well.
I see. What I'm really wondering is, were they using this as a reason to go back to Fallujah, or were you guys just told now it's time to go get them, or?
From the briefings we got before going back into Fallujah, the general sentiment was that had the military not been micromanaged, it could have finished the job in Fallujah in April. And so finally, when they got another chance to clear the city of the foreign fighters and the insurgents, the idea was that once we did that, it would basically cripple the insurgency. We could capture Zarqawi, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
We could just kind of rid the city of all the foreign people who had come over there and tried to reinstate, you know, the Islamic law.
Mm-hmm.
And
Mike Ergo, I'm sorry to do this, but I'm running out of time here, and I'd like to talk to you again because I think there's much more that you can tell us. So if you wouldn't mind, I'll put you on hold, and you and Katrina could pull up a schedule and see if there's a time when you might be able to come back and talk to us more about your experiences.
I'd love to.
Okay. Mike Ergo, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Coming up next, the latest report on climate change from the IPCC. We'll talk to its director in India.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience, who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the secret garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955. Or visit the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel's only bookstore, and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
If you have a hard time losing weight, especially stubborn fat around the hips, thighs, and stomach, you need Affinity's Lose and Snooze. You can actually lose weight, even while you sleep. The advanced Lose and Snooze formula in combination with the one-day diet plan will accelerate your weight loss dramatically. Lose and Snooze with natural ingredients is scientifically designed to help you lose up to 20 pounds a month while still eating your favorite foods. Start reshaping your body. Fit into that new wardrobe and lose those stubborn pounds safe and fast, even while you sleep. Try Lose and Snooze risk-free today. Buy two bottles of Lose and Snooze and you'll get a free supply of the one-day diet. If you are not completely satisfied with your weight loss within 30 days, simply send back any unused portion for a full refund of your purchase price. No questions asked. So start taking off those stubborn pounds today, even while you sleep. Call right now, 1-800-985-3668. That's 1-800-985-3668. Call now.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Well, there's a little something that's been freaking me. Read it in the news, I seen it on TV. It haunts me in the night and creeps me in the morning. A spooky little thing called global warming.
Yes, global warming is a real issue, a real threat, and humans are a real source of the CO2 and other emissions that contribute to the warming of the planet. Al Gore said, we got a fever. And Queen Elizabeth is at the White House for a white tie dinner tonight. And it is, we learned from a meeting with Tony Blair that she had, that it's been leaked, that she thinks that Britain needs to pressure the United States to make a stronger stand to fight global warming issues. And so perhaps over that state dinner tonight, she might have some powers of persuasion over President Bush. Joining us to talk about the third report, a package that was released last week by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, is its chair, Dr. R.K. Pachauri, and he is the director of TERI, T-E-R-I, which is the Tata Energy Research Institute in India, where he's been its director, or at least been involved there since 1981. He was promoted to director general in April of 2001. Dr. Pachauri, thank you for getting up so early to talk with us today.
Well, I've been up for the past 3 hours, so that's fine.
Well, I guess you've been very much in demand to talk about this report.
Yes, it's really been most satisfying to see the amount of interest that the report has generated. And this is the third product of our fourth assessment report. There's a fourth one which is to come out in November, which will be a synthesis of all the three reports, and we expect that would be received with a lot of interest by policymakers.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me just offer a quick summary here from a news account and then ask you to expand a little bit. This document, with a 35-page summary, a 1,000-plus page study that was released last week, says the world has the technology and wealth now to act decisively in time to avoid a sharp rise in temperatures that scientists say would wipe out species, raise ocean levels, trigger droughts in some places, flooding in others, and wreak economic havoc. Tell us a little bit here about how these assessments were made, and if you feel that this report is going to help persuade political leaders that action is not only warranted and timely, but could be very productive.
Well, the IPCC is an intergovernmental body, and it functions independently under all the governments of the world. What we do is to mobilize the best experts and scientists from all over the world, and we work for a period of almost 4 years trying to create this report. and it covers all aspects of climate change. Now, I must say that this is a pretty complex and pretty large undertaking. The whole process requires reviews of the drafts at various stages by experts, and every comment that we receive has to receive consideration. It may not be accepted by the authors, but they have to consider each single one. And finally, the report is subject to government reviews. In other words, we receive comments from governments, and these also have to be explicitly considered. And finally, the summary is approved line by line, which essentially means word by word, by the governments. And that's why, for instance, this Working Group 3 report, which was approved in Bangkok, required 4 days of meetings, of which we spent 2 nights discussing each and every item on the summary for policymakers. So all I want to say is this has the broadest expertise that one can mobilize on the planet, and these are experts who have distinguished themselves over the years through work on various aspects of climate change and related areas. And finally, the report itself has the stamp of approval of all the governments of the world. So it's a remarkable undertaking with scientific expertise being accepted by governments from all over the world. And that's why I suppose it has a certain level of credibility and appeal.
And Dr. Pachauri, you'll understand my skepticism. I am a critic of the Bush administration, particularly on these issues. And I believe that while they may have approved the report, their intentions probably do not match the words of this report.
Well, that's where I believe it's extremely important, and I'm not talking about the U.S. itself, but globally, we have to create awareness about the issues underlying the report, because it's only when the public gets concerned about the problem and what can be done to solve it that in democratic governments you might see action taking place. So I would say the most important challenge in a democracy is to see that the public and people at large get to understand the basics of what we have found in these reports.
Now, Dr. Pachauri, here in the United States, fingers are often pointed at the developing world, notably China and in some cases India, and that even if the United States complied with the Kyoto Accords that we failed to even attempt to ratify, that China's growth and India's growth will contribute more than we might be able to reduce our emissions.
Well, I really think this is a global responsibility, and every society and every country has to do its bit. But, you know, there is a historical reason. After all, if you look at carbon dioxide, at the start of the Industrial Revolution, we had 280 parts per million in the atmosphere of carbon dioxide. Today, it's close to 380 parts per million. So the problem has essentially been caused by industrialization, with excessive use of fossil fuels. And this certainly resulted in high levels of prosperity. Let's face it, the developed world has reached where it has largely because it's consumed huge quantities of energy, fossil fuels in particular. And there is, therefore, a historical responsibility. And, you know, in China and India, let's face it, there is a large number of the population which is still living in poverty. And in India alone, there are about 500 million people who don't have electricity. They have never seen any form of modern energy in their daily lives. So, you know, there is a challenge in terms of bringing at least a certain level of decent livelihoods into a large section of the population that is currently deprived of it. Now, I'm not saying that China and India have to do exactly what the developed world has done in pursuing a path of development, and I think the developing countries have to use technologies and means that would allow a lower level of carbon intensity. But the developed world has to move first, and you know, that's something which is required in the Framework Convention on Climate Change. which incidentally was signed and ratified by every country in the world, including the U.S. And therefore, I think there's a political, a moral, and I would say an ethical issue involved in taking action. And I hope in the next round of negotiations we arrive at some acceptable agreement.
We're talking with Dr. R.K. Pachauri. As I mentioned, he is chair of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And last week they issued the third of four reports. And this document gives us some ideas of what action could be taken at this time. And tell us a little bit about what you consider to be some of the most promising developments or technologies that we could employ that would help us reduce these troublesome emissions while keeping our economy strong in both the developed and underdeveloped parts of the world.
Well, there's a whole range of possibilities for bringing about energy efficiency improvements, and these technologies are around. If you take the transport sector, there are efficient automobiles available in the world and there are some inefficient ones. And I think if we had a mix of policies and perhaps some determination on the part of the public, one could move towards more efficient forms of transportation, greater use of public transport, more efficient vehicles. In the building sector, there are enormous opportunities. I recall, for instance, President Jimmy Carter going on television wearing a cardigan and asking and appealing to Americans to keep their thermostats a bit lower in the winter and use warm clothing if necessary. Now, this also involves, if I may say, some changes in behavior and lifestyles. But I don't think that really means giving up the comforts and the convenience of modern living. In the industrial sector, there are opportunities for bringing about efficiency improvements, and often these can be done at negative costs. In other words, a company that really focuses on bringing about efficiency improvements often ends up making money rather than losing it. So, you know, it's really so much a case of developing a new attitude, looking for means by which we cut down on waste, and I would even go to the extent of saying that if lifestyles and consumption patterns can be changed, one area that perhaps one might focus on is eating less meat. You know, the beef cycle, for instance, is an extremely carbon-intensive cycle, and I'm reasonably sure if people ate a little less meat, they'd be healthier, and the planet would be healthier.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a whole range of things that could be done, and there are new technologies that will come on the horizon, particularly if the price of energy is appropriately taxed. There is a carbon tax, then, you know, it will spur in innovation and investments in research and development, all of which will be good for the planet, even for local reasons, quite
now,
apart from...
Dr. Pachauri, cited President Jimmy Carter's speech. I believe that was back around 1978. And I did take it to heart. And at the same time, he paid a political price for that. It wasn't the only reason he was a one-term president, but he was often ridiculed for that. And Al Gore, who has taken a strong leadership role in trying to educate the American public on climate change issues, likewise, suffers many slings and arrows from critics who have pawed their way through his utility bills and try to undermine his credibility, in what I think is a silly attempt at gotcha. But we have a critical problem in this country in that we want to avoid confronting this as long as we possibly can.
Well, I agree with you, but you know, every pioneer, every leader who's ahead of his time often pays a price for being ahead of his time. And that's why I think it's so important for the public to be enthused, to be aware of what's required to be done, because often, you know, it's a case of shooting the messenger just because he brings you a message that you don't like. And I believe in this day and age in democratic forms of government, leaders also have to inform the public. I mean, when Al Gore was vice president, I wish he had done much more to inform the public about the problem of climate change, because I know him well and I know how deeply he believes in the issue. But he sort of went silent when he was vice president of the U.S. Now I can realize the political reasons why he did so. But I think what he's saying now is making a lot of sense, and people are beginning to listen to him. Of course, there will be his detractors who would, you know, come up with all kinds of trivial objections to how much electricity he uses and so on.
Right.
But I think this is a price that pioneers often have to pay, unfortunately.
And would you like to tell us about your utility bills? Just kidding, Doctor. I need to take a break for some commercial activity, and we'll return in 3 minutes. Dr. R.K. Pachauri is our guest, chair of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. They issued their third report last week. We'll talk more about it and whether nuclear power is in the mix in an effort to reduce our emissions. That's coming up next. If you have a question or comment, call us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. You've got the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
Hi, Ed Schultz here. Starting May 14th, the Ed Schultz Show moves to 9 a.m. to noon right here on KRXA 540. So join us for the best in talk radio, news, commentary, and your calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be on the Ed Schultz Show, 9 a.m. to noon, starting May 14th, right here on AM 540 KRXA.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance. Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you have the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
All right, thanks very much. We're going to take a look at a problem in, well, how about Santa Cruz? Looks like southbound 1 after 17. We have a crash reported there, and the CHP is on the way to the scene. Also want to take a look at yet another problem. This is in Big Sur on Coast Road at Highway 1. It's a vehicle that went off the roadway about 150 feet down a ravine. No injuries reported. That is the good news. And a Pacheco Pass 152 eastbound after Dinosaur Point with a vehicle on fire. It's actually a big rig, and it's on the right shoulder. The fire department is blocking the right lane for a cleanup. Traffic is backed up for a good couple of miles. Now, here's the problem. They're not going to have everything cleared till about 9 o'clock tonight, so this is a pretty significant situation. Again, 152 at Dinosaur Point, a vehicle on fire. Right lane going to be shut down till just about 9 o'clock tonight. And the support brought to you by the Toyota Prius. Toyota Prius with an EPA estimated 60 miles per gallon.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 9 minutes away from the hour. Dr. R.K. Pachauri is with us. He is chair of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and he joins us from New Delhi, India, where it's real early in the morning. And we're grateful to Dr. Pachauri for getting up early, but he said that other media people got him up even earlier, so that makes me feel a little bit less guilty. Dr. Pachauri, here in the United States, we are less comfortable with the idea of expanding our nuclear power generators as a response to global warming. And I enumerate the issues in three parts. One is we haven't dealt with the nuclear waste issue. Number two, we have, unlike France and other countries, a very weak regulatory structure. And there's been several rounds of deregulation that essentially have put our electric power industries on the honor system, and I'm not comfortable with that. And thirdly, we've had a hell of a time controlling the cost of construction of nuclear power plants, and so there is no assurance that we could build a new round of plants economically. What are your thoughts about nuclear power as part of the response to climate change?
Well, this is a very complex area, and in fact, for the first time, we've assessed nuclear energy in this report. This wasn't done by the IPCC in its earlier reports. And we've clearly brought out the fact that while this technology has potential, it also has a host of problems, which you've just enumerated. And I really think you need to get the regulatory, the safety, and other issues in place if you want to create confidence among the public before you go in for large-scale expansion of nuclear energy.
Mm-hmm.
But I have been told that the new designs that are on the anvil and actually are now on the verge of commercialization are much safer, and there's a much higher level of assurance, at least as far as the risk of any kind of accident is concerned. The problem of nuclear waste is very much there, and, you know, it's a universal problem. And there's also the danger now, I might say, of terrorists getting hold of nuclear material and perhaps using it to produce nuclear bombs.
Indeed.
You know, there are those kinds of issues also which we need to be very concerned about. But I think you said it, you need a strong and effective regulatory mechanism if you really want to go in for nuclear energy on a large scale. And I think that has to be put in place before one ventures into a large-scale program.
Understood. Turning to another issue, the Los Angeles Times picked up a story from the Financial Times today about the cap-and-trade system that was originally envisioned as a part of the Kyoto Treaty. And in sum, they say that the carbon credits produced under Kyoto may fall very short of the projections due to projects and that haven't lived up to their expectations or are not on track, and also faulty expectations. What is your sense? Because I'm enthralled with the idea of a workable marketplace where we can cap emissions and trade those, because I think that that kind of an offset system gives us the most opportunity to engage industries in this effort.
I agree with you. I think you have to use the market for bringing about a change in direction. And it's still early days. There have been problems with many of these trading mechanisms as far as carbon is concerned. But I wouldn't say that you need to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I mean, there are means by which some of these problems can be fixed. Yes, there has been some weakness in monitoring and follow-up of projects that perhaps were supposed to yield a certain level of reduction in carbon dioxide emissions, and they've not been quite on track. There are several sort of administrative and managerial problems associated with some of these programs. But, you know, they're not beyond the reach of human society and specific organizations in being able to fix. I personally see the need for a major expansion in these mechanisms rather than doing away with them.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, these are early days, and, you know, we're just learning by doing. And I'm sure in the next phase, let's say after 2012, when the second commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol will come into existence, there will be much better systems in place for ensuring that we have better compliance in the future.
Let's take a caller. It's Patrick in Carmel Valley. Patrick, you're on the air with Dr. Pachauri.
Hey, I'd just like to discuss RADA Corporation just went into a joint operating agreement with the guy in France, MDI, that makes air cars. You know, the lightweight ones run on compressed air at 4,500 mm-hmm. PSI. Do you know anything about that? And see, tremendous potential there like I do. Or
all right, what? Dr. Pichari, I don't know if you could hear him, but he's asking about compressed air-powered vehicles.
Well, yes, I've heard about them, but, you know, I would like to understand what the overall energy efficiency of these systems is. And, you know, if they lead to high levels of efficiency of use of energy and fossil fuels, then by all means, I think one should find a way of disseminating these technologies. To be quite honest, I really haven't looked into this in depth.
Okay. And, Patrick, how is the compressed air generated?
Either an onboard generator overnight or, you know, heavy-duty industrial ones, you know, like in air stations.
Mm-hmm.
Arada Corporation obviously feels there's tremendous potential. It's the biggest car company in India, if I'm not mistaken, and they're in a joint operating agreement. I would think that the good doctor would have motivation to check it out.
All right. We'll ask him to do that. Thank you for the call, Patrick. I appreciate that. Dr. Pichari, just about 45 seconds remaining. Tell us what you see as the next steps and how my listeners can support your efforts.
Well, I would appeal to listeners in the U.S. To see the sort of historic responsibility that they have and to exercise leadership and also ensure not just future generations but this generation against the impacts of climate change, which are going to become increasingly more negative, and thereby really use the enormous innovative capacity that the U.S. has in devising solutions. And all of this can be done without losing the comfort and the goodness of modern day living. And I think the U.S. can and should lead in this area. And I hope you can bring this about through political action at every level.
Thank you very much, Dr. R.K. Pichari. He is chair of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change associated with the United Nations. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wine, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top-shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
I'm Scott Dick, the host of the Tasty Planet Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., I interview great guests, including national, regional, and local personalities that make our planet so delicious. And I want your feedback. It's simple. Go to www.tastyplanet.org, complete the survey, fill out a form, and you'll be automatically entered to win. That's all there is to it, and your info is safe with me. I won't use it for anything but this contest. So listen in on Saturdays from 1 to 4 p.m., and as Julia Child used to say, bon appétit!
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Searchers in Greensburg, Kansas found two more bodies today, bringing the tornado death toll to 10. Much of the town is simply demolished. FEMA Director David Paulson is there.
The part that FEMA is going to play is we are here to assist the state, assist the local community, to get this community back on its feet.
President Bush is expected to visit Wednesday. The Red Cross is also in Greensburg. This is spokesman Peter Tejon.
We're driving around providing meals to them. We have mental health counselors who will be here. We're also starting financial assistance to the families.
And the National Guard is there.
We're responding not only to the Greensburg tornado and the follow-on rains, but the flooding that's starting in many portions of the state.
Colonel Eric Peck says their equipment is stretched thin because of deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan, but there's no shortage of troops.
What we end up doing is having to not take everybody that volunteers because so many people want to go down to help out.
Residents are salvaging what they can, but this woman counsels them to keep their property losses in perspective.
I just want everybody to realize that when you go through this and you lose everything, they're just things. They can't do anything for you. They brought you some joy and brought you some pleasure. But what really matters is human life.
At the White House state dinner, a royal toast.
Mr. President, I raise my glass to you and to Mrs. Bush, to the friendship between our two countries, and to the health, freedom, prosperity, and happiness of the people of the United States of America.
Britain's Queen Elizabeth clinked glasses with President Bush. She sipped white wine. He had water. Among the 134 people seated at round tables, Nancy Reagan, Henry Kissinger, Arnold Palmer, and Yitzhak Perlman. He's the after-dinner entertainment. In the Senate today, a tussle over prescription drugs from overseas. CBS News correspondent Dan Raviv explains how it turned out.
For those who want to legalize prescription imports from Canada and other countries where medicine's a lot cheaper, there was victory, a quick voice vote saying yes. But the legal imports won't happen because of a more formal vote, 49-40, Republican Thad Cochran's amendment requiring all drugs coming in be certified as safe.
Counterfeit drugs contaminated with an industrial solvent have poisoned hundreds, if not thousands, of people.
Federal health officials say they don't have the budget to certify foreign medications. Dan Raviv, CBS News, Washington.
Drug abuse is more rampant than many people thought, and CBS